switcher. Good morning, everyone, and good morning, Chairperson. I'm present.
Morning, Chair, Mr. McPherson. Chair.
I'm here, thank you.
Chair, we have a member of the Small Business Committee, Mr. Faiz Jacobs.
Morning, Chair. I'm just observing. Thank you.
Chair, Ms. Yaku, Chair.
You're welcome.
Morning, everyone. Morning, Chair. I'm present.
Chair, Mr. Burns Mamasha, Chair.
Molo Salo Namalungu. Tikona. Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome.
Chair, Mr. Custis, Chair.
Okay.
Chair, Mr. Mulder, Chair.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, all.
Chairperson, Mr. Thwing just joined us. And his audio is connecting, Chair. He is present. And Ms. Matahum just joined the committee as well. So we correct.
Thank
we,
you. It seems we, like we have a full house.
Yes, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. We can we flag the agenda for this meeting, please? Right, so we have the agenda as flighted at the moment, which is opening and welcome, apologies, adoption, briefing of the DTIC on the Equity Equivalent Investment Program, the BBBE Commission's activities over the financial year 2020 and 2021. Of
recording
course,
in progress.
Followed by discussions and closing remarks. Can I take this opportunity to welcome you all to this meeting? We are convening this meeting so that we can receive a briefing, as we have indicated, on the equity equivalent programs and also the BBBE Commission work in the previous financial year. So you are all welcome to the meeting. Can we have apologies, Secretary?
Chair, we have a full house, no apologies, Chair.
Okay, can I have a move and seconder then for the adoption of the agenda?
Chair, Ms. Mwatse, Chair.
Ms. Mwatse?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I move for adoption of the agenda.
Thank you, Ms. Motau. Honorable Motau.
Thank you, Chair. I second the adoption of the agenda.
Okay. Are there any objections to the agenda as tabled and adopted? I don't see any, so we'll move to the next agenda item. If you can just write the agenda again, I don't have the agenda open in front of me.
Chair, we'll be receiving a briefing from the DTIC Chair, and the Deputy Minister Gina is leading the delegation, Chair.
Thank you so much, Deputy Minister Gina. Over to you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me greet you. Let me greet the members of the Portfolio Committee, and also greet the delegation that comes from the DTIC together with the BBBE Commission. Again, let us thank you for affording us this opportunity to come and brief the committee on these two presentations that we are going to be doing today, of which we consider them very important. And thank you very much, really, for making sure that you're scheduling them this early in the year, because we'll really need your input and the comments, because we truly believe that the policy that you are going to be discussing today is the committee, is the policy that is at the center of the transformation of our economy. Hence, we are going to be looking at the equity equivalent investment program today, where in our presentation, we'll be looking at to say how does this policy help us to build the economy for the future, and also looking at the operations of these multinationals that are here in South Africa, what is their contribution in the development, especially of the SMMEs? What is it? How are they bringing up these SMMEs, making sure that they participate in the broad base of our economy? So our presentation will be built on that, and even getting into the figures themselves as to say, where are we when it comes to that participation of all these multinationals that we are having in our country and in the broad building of the economy using the SMMEs. And also getting into zoom into the presentation that we are going to be having, where it will be led by our Commissioner, Ms. Zodwa Ntuli, on the BEE Commission, where are they up until this far for 2020-21 financial year, where again we are going to be zooming into what are the achievements that we have seen this policy bringing to the country as such. But what is also nice, where we always encourage our members to look at these annual reports, the national status trend that we look at, which we get annually, and it's good to go through them to see how much we are making just to have a dent on the economic transformation fund in our country. Though when you look at these reports, yes, we do see a little bit of a movement when you look at the outcomes of such reports, but somehow it's a little disappointing. But the commissioner will get into that as to say, what is it and where are we as a country? Though we do see some pockets of improvement, but we always say it's not something that we can write home of that much. But as we continue to make this dent and make sure that when it comes to transformation, we bring along everyone so that they can play a meaningful role, that is the discussion that we are going to be having today when it comes to this discussion. And as I said at the beginning, we are looking forward to get the inputs and the ideas even more from the members of the Portfolio Committee to say how best can we move on and make sure that we continue to bring everyone. When we talk to the issues of inclusive growth, that is what we are looking for as the department with your assistance, honorable members. With me today, I've got CEO, Mr. Shabir, who is going to be leading the delegation. With him in his delegation, I've got COO, Ms. Matomela, and I've got acting DG, Mr. Molefane, and Mr. Jacob Maputa, who is going to be doing a presentation. And also, I've got a commissioner, Ms. Zodwa Ntuli, the commissioner at BBBE with her team, and she is going to be leading a delegation. At this moment, Chair, allow me to hand over to the CFO to do the basic introduction of the presentation, so that Mr. Maputa can kick in and do the presentation on our first presentation that we are having today on the Equity Equivalent Investment Program. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DM. Over to you, CFO. For the introduction, who is that DM? The CFO?
Okay, if CFO Mr. Shabir is still struggling, I can head over straight to Mr. Maputa to kick in with the introduction with the presentation. It's fine. Mr. Maputa.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Maputa, you may start your presentation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Deputy Minister. Good morning to honorable members, and thanks for the opportunity to make this presentation on Equity Equivalent Investment Program, which is one of the key programs that we are utilizing, or instrument that we are utilizing under the broad base Black Economic Empowerment Policy, to work with multinationals to ensure that they bring the investment into the economy, as the Deputy Minister highlighted, more especially focusing on SMMEs,
through the enterprise and supply development process. In other words, ensuring that they give the opportunity to the SMEs and the black enterprises, black industrialists, opportunities to be part of their value chain, but also to be part of the global chain. So in a way, the program also promotes localization by ensuring that some of the products and services that some of these multinationals are currently doing abroad, they can be able to localize them through this program. So in terms of the outline of my presentation, I'll start with context, as I've already started, the overview of EIP, what EIP or Equity Equivalent Investment Program, what are the approved programs to date, we'll highlight those, and as well as the value, then the some of the achievements and the impact that the program is having. So, as the Deputy Minister highlighted, our transformation journey, our economic transformation journey continues. And as the country, we should continue and persist in ensuring that we create an economy that is inclusive, the economy that creates opportunities for all, and South Africans. In doing that, we have to acknowledge, the fact that the majority of the population, black people in particular, for many years were excluded from the mainstream of the economy. They were excluded from using their talents and skills to be meaningful participants in this economy. So the BBB policy, as part of the broader economic transformation policy, is there to ensure that we give opportunities, to those who are disadvantaged, which are the majority of black people. So that is the what the policy is about, and of course, as government, as the working together with the members, with inputs from members and all other stakeholders and social partners, we will continue to ensure that the policy is being calibrated and positioned as a driver to eradicate the triple threats of poverty, inequality, and unemployment within the South African economy, including the fact that COVID has worsened some of those or these three challenges, major challenges that we face. So as government, I believe that it's important that we continue working with the social partner within the framework.
Can I check, is it Mr. Maputa's network or my own? We don't hear him anymore.
I think it's his chair.
It's his chair.
Mr. Maputa?
Better now.
Mr. Maputa? Yeah. Going back to you now, I hope that you in the spot where you are, you're going to stay so that we can hear you. I also just want to caution you in terms of time. I think we, to allow enough discussion and inputs and responses to your presentation, I want to propose that we use 40 minutes for the presentation. So if you can then just keep your eye on the clock, please. Thank you. You may proceed.
Hello, okay, Chair. Am I audible enough?
Yes, you are audible now.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Chair. And thanks. I will try and make sure that I move quickly so that we don't waste time. So I was still explaining the context with regard to where the where we are with the BE policy. Now, within the BE policy itself, we've got five pillars or five elements, which measure whether we're making progress or not. These five pillars were designed to say that if we were to transform the economy, if we were to have an economy that is inclusive, there are five key areas or five pillars that we need to focus on, working together with the business and, as I said, the labor and other social partners. The first pillar is what we call ownership, which requires that the businesses in South Africa should work together in giving out equity opportunities to black people, mainly the entrepreneurs, but also to workers, like we've seen with companies like PepsiCo and so forth, as well as to communities, especially those that are community-based, your mines and so forth, to ensure that the communities, as well as the broad-based groups, women, youth, and so forth, have been given the opportunity to be owners of participants as owners in the economy. So that is the first pillar, ownership. Then we've got the management control, which measures the level at which the people that are disadvantaged are participants as managers and controllers of enterprises. The third area is the what you call skills development, which measures the extent to which we are spending as a country, meaning business as well as the non-business, the state, with regard to capacity building opportunities, especially focusing on young people. The fourth area are very important measures to the extent to which there is development of SMMEs, of new enterprises, of innovators and so forth. We call it enterprise and supplier development. In the main, it's equivalent to SMME development. Then the last area or the last element is socioeconomic development, which is similar to what internationally is called corporate social investment. So those are the five pillars of the BEE. Now the EIP program come in as an equivalent to ownership equity. So during the development of the policy, the very first iteration in 2007, when we were consulting, and the multinationals, raised the fact that there are some of the multinationals, not all of them, but some that might not be able to comply with the equity aspect due to various reasons. So we then said, working together with them, what will be an alternative, what will be an equivalent that they can do so that they also become part of fully become part of this transformation journey. So we then designed the equity equivalent investment program to say that if there are such multinationals, then they will indicate, they will work together with the DTIC, and that they will be as an equivalent of not being able to give out equity, they will spend some kind of money, and then they will use that money in areas that I will highlight in the next slide. So the equity equivalent contribution is measured based on the value of the company's assets here in South Africa, or alternatively based on the value of the company's turnover. So if it's to be measured against the value of the asset, the measure is 25% of the value of asset here in South Africa. In other words, we will do the valuation of the company, a company like Microsoft, and then determine that their value of asset here in South Africa is so much. And then based on that, 25% of that value, that will be their equity equivalent investment contribution. Alternatively, it could be measured using the 4% of the turnover of the enterprise. So those are the two alternative ways of measuring the equity equivalent investment contribution. So as I said, the equity equivalent promote investment in SMME and broad participation. The key four areas of investment or support that the multinational can use is enterprise and supplier development, as I said, which is really SMME development. Skills development, especially the critical skills that we do not have or that we have a shortage as a country, you know, skills in ICT, software developers, and so forth, researchers that the economy needs to be able to, you know, to grow. The third area that they can make a contribution is with regard to the development of black industrialists, and then the fourth. The last area is research and development. As a benefit, the multinational get the 25 points, which is the equivalent of the 25 points that they would have received if they were to do the normal equity ownership transaction. And also important that EIP does not displace other areas that are mentioned of contribution, so they still also expected to do to transform in other areas, management, in skills development, enterprise and supply development, as well as socio-economic development. Now, depending on the value of the contribution, as I mentioned, that the contribution is measured using either the 25% of the company's assets, value of assets in South Africa, or the 4% of their turnover. Depending on the value of that amount, that determines the duration to which the multinational participates in the program. So anything between 100 million and above, the duration is 10 years. Between 75 million and 100 million, the duration is 7 years. Between 50 and 75, 5 years, and then anything below 50 is 3 years. So there is no once empowered, always empowered with regard to the EIP. The amount that the multinational contribute determine the duration. After that, the program has elapsed, then the multinational can still do reapply to continue, or if they depend on whether they are still able to continue, they can make that particular decision. We've had some of the multinational that are in the second phase of participation. Now, in terms of the approved multinationals today, we have well over at least over 20. Some are no longer participating, some are still continuing, and we also have new applications that we are busy with currently that will be coming into the system. So we have had HP, as you can see, they are into ICT. Their focus was on skills development, ICT, software development skills. We had Liebe, a German Swiss company. Their focus was on enterprise development, the kind of enterprise development that promote localization of some of their activities, manufacturing activities. Hansen Transmission, We have got Microsoft, one of the biggest contributor to the program. They are into second phase of participation. We started with them in 2011, and then last year when the first one lapsed, they decided that they still want to continue. In the first phase, they developed well over seven Black-owned ICT companies, some of which have got access to international markets and so forth. And then with the new program, they still continue with that, but also targeting at least 400 apprenticeships in the ICT, what we call the app factory, as well as three Black industrialist companies that they will be investing in. Tanner and Townsend is in construction, UK-based, UK-headquartered entity, and their focus also is on enterprise development. We've got IBM, which also is in ICT, Dell, South Africa, Caterpillar, one of the biggest as well, the Yellow Equipment US company, Novas, which is small in terms of value. They are into agriculture, mostly animal feed and research, agricultural research. We've got Samsung, which was approved in 2019, focusing on the development of enterprises in e-waste. There's at least two Black industrialists that's going to benefit out of this program in terms of being financially supported by Samsung using the equity equivalent money, but also they are targeting a development of the service centers, the service centers where people help.
Is it Mr. Maputa's network? Or is it my network secretary?
No, Chair, we can hear you. I think it's Mr. Maputa.
Yes, Chair. Our network is stable and fine, Chair.
Mr. Maputa, we are losing you again. Otherwise, I think you should hand over to one of your team members who has better connectivity.
Yes, I was asking Mr. Mulifani if he can just finish the rest of the presentation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mulifani. Over to you. Oh, your network is also bad. Let me hear you, Mr. Mulifani. No, your sound is very distorted. We can't hear you. Is there anyone else in the team whose network is better? No, Mr. Mulifani, we can't continue with you because your sound is very distorted. We can't hear you. I think we've lost you now also from the platform. Mr. Maputa, can you continue? Let's hope that your network improves.
Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear now.
Okay, all right. No, sorry about that. Technology can sometimes disappoint. Yes, yeah, so we've got IBM. And then we've got the Dell South Africa, Caterpillar, Samsung, as well as Prigoglass, which is a great company, as I said, manufacturing of refrigerators. Then we've got the Pharma Dynamics. They are the pharmaceutical entity in the healthcare sector. They're focusing on skills development as well as development of enterprise. There is one particular enterprise that is in syringe manufacturing that they are developing or assisting to be able to be to be established. We've got the MSC, the Mediterranean Shipping Company, focusing mostly in the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, where most of their activities are, focusing on development of enterprises as well as skills, whether it's artisan, development of artisan that can repair ships, maintenance of ships, and so forth. Amazon, the ICT company, also targeting about 47 black-owned SMMEs. And then we've got the automotive one, the collective big one, with a value of about $6 billion, and targeting about 90 automotive, black-owned automotive enterprises within the next 10 years, and focusing on the entire value chain, but mostly on those that are into manufacturing. However, they'll also be supporting those that are, you know, development of new black dealership, which already there's one that Isuzu has supported in KwaZulu-Natal. Then we've got the latest one that the last one that was approved late last year, JP Morgan, the American bank, investment bank, yes, is will be focused. You know, they've established a fund, and that fund will be focusing on the development of enterprises in the industrial sector, the green sector, and so forth. And the nice thing about it is that the fund is being managed by a black fund management entity. So not only ensuring that the ensuring that the opportunities are being given to black-owned enterprises within the financial services sector itself. So the contribution today, as you can see, mostly in the automotive in terms of value. Then you've got the ICT, mostly the ICT companies, manufacturing, and then you've got the rest in construction, agriculture, maritime, and the financial service, which we are also seeing a lot of companies now wanting to follow JP Morgan's example. So we say that to date, at least 22 companies, as I said, mostly in automotive, ICT. Conservatively, we're saying more than 2,000 jobs are created. The value that we have been able to secure that is being invested in the South African economy through EIP over $88 billion. Then we say to date at least 87 emerging or black enterprises have benefited, as well as many young people that have been benefited through skills development in ICT as artisans and in all other areas. So this just summarizes the previous slides. Then just maybe zooming into some of the key ones. As I said, the big one being the automotive collective, the seven OEMs that are manufacturing here in South Africa, they are doing the EIP collectively for maximum impact, bringing together the resources, the financial resources, as well as their market power that they have to be able to unlock opportunities for black enterprises, the target being at least 90 within the next 10 years. To date, 10 projects have been approved, identified, and also the value of the market access required so far are at least $2 billion. For those 10 that have been identified. So you can see that the program is unlocking the opportunities, for the black enterprises, 573 jobs retained. So for those where there was acquisition by black enterprises, and also for new ventures, some have been able to to create new jobs, and we're talking about at least 67 new jobs that have been created. As I said, mostly in manufacturing, five, so out of the 10 so far, five are in manufacturing, two are dealerships, and then the three are the after service repair, panel beaters, and so forth. The Pharma Dynamics, the pharmaceutical company that I mentioned, through the EIP, there's the skills part, but also one of the key programs that we're working with them on is on the digital hubs. This is the digital hubs that we are rolling out as the DTIC. There was one that was launched in Botshabelo by the Deputy Minister, I think, last year. So we've seen the success of that and the opportunity that the digital hub gives to young people to be able to to use that platform to start their own businesses and also to manage their own business. So we're saying that we are rolling out the programs to other provinces, and working together with the Pharma Dynamics, we'll be rolling out two at least in Limpopo, in Seshego Township, as well as in Kwango, and they are located within the industrial park, Seshego Industrial Park, as well as Kwango Industrial Park. So that's the benefit that through the EIP we will be having by supporting those two digital hubs. The MSC, as I said, are mostly located in the Eastern Cape, as well as the KwaZulu-Natal, focusing on the skills development, ensuring that they train young people with regard to the maritime industry in general, but focusing on ship maintenance and repair. At least 69 young people so far are benefited. Those that are in, steel assistant, electricians, skill riggers, experiential welding, training in welding, and other skills development. So through this program, MSC is supporting young people in those two provinces, most of them coming from rural areas. Okay, then we've got Turner and Thompson, which is a construction and management entity, and the based in the Western Cape, but the UK multinational. Their program started around 2011, and they are now also reapplying to participate in the next phase. They've seen that the benefit that the program has been able to expand to the targeted beneficiaries, but also also benefiting them as a multinational. So in the first phase, which they conducted, they were able to support at least 84 SMMEs, in five provinces. One is in the Eastern Cape, one in KZN, Gauteng, one in Limpopo, and then 39 in the Western Cape. Out of those, there were also a Black Women Enterprise, at least 39, and then Black Youth-Owned Enterprise, 15. So they assisted them with regard to quality management processes, compliance with things like the ISO 9000 and so forth. Most of them are in the construction sector. So the aim was to take them from the level where they are, and improve their quality management system and other areas of their businesses. And most of them, or some of them, have been able to access opportunities locally as well as international. Collectively, their revenue has been able to improve by at least 300 million through this intervention, the ERP intervention by Turner and Thompson. And then also a job opportunity created directly and indirectly through the program, as you can see, mostly in the construction and civil work, because of the most of them are in that sector. So those are some of the benefits that the program has been able to the opportunity to give to the in terms of jobs. We've got Dell South Africa, the ICT company. Their main program is that we together with them develop an academy we call Kulisa Academy, focusing on the ICT skills, high level ICT skills, and most of the young people that have been coming out of that academy been able to access the job market. We can at least account for at least the 95 of them being able to get employment opportunity. And as you can see, the spread is all over the country. So not only ensuring that it's only a student from Gauteng, Cape Town and Durban, but that we also target young people across all other provinces, especially the rural provinces. Samsung, as I mentioned,
You have just under Mr. Kuta.
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt. You have just under 10 minutes left for your presentation.
Okay. I'm almost done, Chair. Thanks. Yes, the Samsung program, which was approved in 2019, it's got two legs or three legs. The first one has to do with research and development, wherein Samsung will be working together with UWC, University of Western Cape, and what you call Tshimolohong Prison, supporting students with regard to internship as well as research program, so that those students are able to access employment opportunity, but also some that are able to become researchers, focusing on the ICT. So to date, we've got about 18 students that have benefited in the last 2 years, so about 9 for each year that have benefited through the program. They also have what we call the technician program, which they implement with their partners such as Ocu, which is an IT company where they place young people in those companies to learn their skills and to be also become create employment opportunities for those young people. The e-waste Black Industrialist, part of their program, focusing on e-waste, recycling of e-waste material. To date, there are two Black Industrialists that have been selected through a process of advertisement and interviewing, ensuring that the opportunities open for any potential Black Industrialist. And they are working together with the Department of Environmental Affairs and other key stakeholders. So two e-waste Black Industrialists that have been selected, and the process now to assist those Black Industrialists to establish themselves, the infrastructure that they need to be able to do recycling, and also the material that they will need to be able to do that. Then the other part of the program for Samsung, as I said, is development of service center, accredited service center owned by Black people, focusing mostly in marginalized areas. And to date, at least two of those have been onboarded, and we are busy with Samsung to to develop those and to ensure that they can start to operate. Amazon, the ICT company, also focus, their focus is on development of at least 47 black-owned SMMEs that are operating in the ICT sector within the next 7 years. The first 2 years will be the actual skills transfer and development and incubation, and then post that it will be the expanding of the opportunity. So to date, at least 13 beneficiaries have been identified and selected. At least three of those are black women, and the nine are based in Gauteng, three Western Cape, and one in the Eastern Cape. We're working with them to ensure that, as I said, that they will not only benefit the metro center, but that the opportunity have been given to other other provinces. And to date, already about 36 jobs have been opportunities have been created. IBM, to date, we have got about 86 jobs created. The IBM program focus on skills development as well as research. So what we were able to do with the IBM was to establish a research lab here in South Africa using the equity equivalent resources, program resources. The lab is based in Bloemfontein next to Wits University. It's one of the, when it was developed, it was one of the eight labs that Samsung have around the globe, and we agreed with them that the lab must be used to give innovators opportunities to come and innovate, develop their innovation, but also that the IBM will assist those that are able to develop those innovations to commercialize those innovations. So that's one of the benefits that we will be able to achieve through this program, and we're also working with them to ensure that post this program that can still continue to be sustainable. Besides that, they are also giving bursaries to master's and PhD students. Most of them based at Wits, and also ensuring that those students have access to IBM's infrastructure so that they can learn and also be able to be given skills. So today, the 72 bursaries have been given for three graduated and 25 employed, and then 20 after that in their studies. And the critical skills that are created are open pages developers, cloud computing, or cloud professional sales engineering, big data engineering, and as well as analytical developers. So that's IBM. Then we've got Caterpillar, the U.S. Yellow Equipment. When they started in 2017, 2018, in the program, they were importing 100% of everything into the country. And we then said, look, we, as the DTIC, we have an interest, or it's our mandate to ensure that we localize, we reduce our high dependence on imports. How can working with them, we identify the opportunities within their very chain products that they are currently that they were importing 100% into South Africa and reselling. So we're able to identify at least four products the coolant placement, mining bucket, genset component, as well as the light construction body. As a start, let's focus on this product and identify local engineering companies or manufacturing companies that can be able to localize this product to the standards of Caterpillar. So Caterpillar will work with us, identify such enterprise, and then train them to be able to produce in line with their global standards. And also that those enterprises will not only be limited to supplying a Caterpillar locally, but that they can also supply other global value chains within Caterpillar and even outside of Caterpillar. So far, at least 206 have been sent towards this initiative, and at least 100 job opportunities have been created by just ensuring that those products are being localized, and we're already identifying new and more products that can be localized together with Caterpillar. Then the last one, Chair, my last line, the JP Morgan, as I said, is an investment bank, a US based. We're working together with them in the program in terms of financing black enterprises, and they have committed to ensure that at least 1,000 jobs should be created for the duration of their program, which is about 8 years. So they started last year already. They are enterprises, black enterprises, that are being supported, application being received. The game changer is the fact that the financial access is not because it's for transformation and it's for EIP. It's easier in terms of accessibility. So prime miners less or prime less, and also the requirements not as stringent as compared to the real normal commercial transaction. As I said, because this is being done, as a transformation, initiative. So to date, at least 20 deals have been dispersed. These are companies, as I said, ranging from green energy and other manufacturing, sector. So that's the JP Morgan EIP focusing on financial support using the expertise that they have, working with the black-owned fund manager to fund black enterprises, mostly in the industrial sector as well as the green energy sector. And so far, at least 37 job opportunities have been created through those enterprises that have been supported. Thank you very much, Chair and honorable members.
Thank you very much, Mr. Maputa. Members of the Portfolio Committee, there we have the presentation on the Equity Equivalent Investment Program. Can I take hands? I see the hand of Honorable String. Can I see other hands? Over to you, Honorable String, and then Honorable Motaung, and then we'll take other hands as we proceed. Honorable String.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, a few questions, but even though I think some of my questions have been answered as the presentation was ongoing. But first question is, who oversees the EEIP investment, and what monitoring and evaluation processes are in place to ensure that there's transparency and accountability? The question of SMMEs perhaps has been answered. The question there was how many SMMEs have actually been established from the investment coming from the EIP. The next question is, how many multinationals have withdrawn from the EEIP versus those that have joined perhaps in the last year or two? Then with the focus on EEIP being on multinationals, how has this assisted not just localization but also beneficiation? I think to a large extent it seems as if from the presentation the benefits seem to have focused more on localization, but what about the beneficiation? And then my last question is, what effect has the July looting had on multinational investment, including that of Samsung, whose offices in Durban were burnt down, and possibly other multinationals who saw some of their investment threatened or diminished? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Sring. Honourable Motabu.
Thanks, Chair. Let me start firstly by welcoming the presentation. I have only one question. I just want to check on the new applications that are before the EEIP for consideration. How many of these companies in the assessment of the department will have a direct impact in our township and rural areas, as the vast majority of South Africans who need empowerment are in these areas? Thanks, Chair.
Chair, we have Mr. Bilson. Sorry, Chair. We have Mr. Bilson, Ms. Mwatse, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Burns Namashi.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. Yeah, let me also join colleague Honourable Mudawu to really welcome the presentation. And also what seems to be a progressive a program that they are really doing, especially as it would relate to focusing on black-owned businesses. Now, I mean, if we observe from the presentation, looking into the 87 emerging black-owned businesses, which benefited from EIP. The question that probably would have is just to check as to whether there are any supporting measures in place to ensure that there's continued viability and sustainability. I am raising this, Chair, because if there is stability in the business sector, that has a potential to create more jobs, thereby inadvertently addressing one of the critical challenges that we have, which is unemployment. And by addressing the issue of unemployment, we actually narrow the gap that talks to the inequalities which we currently witness in our country, instead of narrowing the gap in terms of equality, the gap is getting more and more widened. So it's important then to get a sense so as to see how in addressing that, it also affords us an opportunity to address some of the ills which we are currently facing. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Burns Mwamashe. Honorable Moatse.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I just want to ask one
question. We can't hear you, Honorable Moatse.
Yes, Chairperson, are you hearing me?
Okay, that's better. Go closer to your microphone.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson.
It's still very soft.
Pardon?
It's very soft. Can you just lift your voice or move closer to your device?
Okay, Chairperson.
That's better, yes.
All right. Thank you very much, Chairperson. My question is that I just want to know what are the estimated jobs to be created by the new applicant from the department. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Moatse. I hope you, the team heard that question. Honorable Mbuyani.
Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. Chair, maybe let me first welcome the presentation and also acknowledge that it's very much informative in terms of capacity building and understanding our equity equivalent partnership that we have. But I just wanted to check how many students are beneficiaries of the ITC critical skills that are offered. And if they are there, and let them try to clarify in terms of demographic and geographical zone that are being assisted in terms of the skills offered by the entity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Briani. Can I hand back to Mr. Maputa for the responses to those questions raised? Mr. Maputa and your team?
No. Thank you, Chairperson.
It's gone very soft. I can't hear you.
Can you hear me, Chairperson?
A bit better, but there's some distortion on the sound.
Okay, let me try and fix.
The sound is very distorted. I can't hear you, Mr. Maputa. Can you try again?
Hello, Chairperson. Is it better?
It's a bit better, but it's still very soft, but at least it's not distorted now. If you can just go closer to your microphone.
Okay. Now, I think the question on the monitoring, we do play that role as the department. We actually also do what we call site visits, wherein we also go and check the activities. So not only, just receiving reports from the multinational on a quarterly basis, which is a requirement, but also that we go to visit some of the beneficiaries. The last year or two, has not been easy due to COVID travel restrictions, but we will be, now that the restrictions have been eased, we will be doing that. So we do and do those visits and ensure that we, you know, we check that the what is agreed with the multinational, because we do sign a binding agreement with them, and if there's any non-compliance from their side, they can lose the points, the 25 points that I've mentioned. That's the thing. So we do make sure that they give us reports, but also that we go and check that the beneficiary, we interview the beneficiary, we interact with the beneficiary, go to those factories, check that the things have been done in congruent with the, what was agreed with the multinationals. How many beneficiaries companies have withdrawn? We have not had anyone withdrawing. In other words, nobody has, in the process of implementation, withdrawn from the program. We have never had such a multinational since the start, so since inception. But what we have is those that have done the program and gone, decided not to renew or to proceed. We only have about four companies that have stopped or not decided to proceed or to reapply to proceed. The issue on beneficiation, yeah, I think it's one of those things that we'll have to look at. I think depending on the sector, if you look at most of the companies that have been participating, you know, in your ICT sector and lately, of course, the automotive and so forth. So I think we will have to, it's something that we'll have to look at, ensure that there is a beneficiation, but also, target, because we also do proactive advocacy. We don't just wait for multinationals. Target such multinationals that are in those sectors or industries where there is a huge need for beneficiation. But the kind of localization that we promote is the localization that also at the same time ensure that there is value addition in the process. But the July meeting, so far none of the multinationals, at least with regard to EIP, have not approached us to say it has affected them, they cannot no longer participate, or they have to deviate, or so far we haven't had that, or any multinational that has approached us or that have indicated that in regard to the EIP, the July routine has had an impact on them. The new applications, I can just mention at least two. We've got Johnson and Johnson, that is in the health sector, and also we've got the other one, which is the Citibank, the American bank that have shown interest or that have approach us, they also want to participate. We haven't yet finalized the actual kind of activities that we're not yet at that phase. We're still looking at the first phase, which is looking at whether the multinational qualify or not, because that's a requirement, so that we first have to establish that and so forth. But I think that as we implement the program, the program, we are also taking those lessons, ensuring that upfront we ensure that the multinational is not only going to invest, as I said, in companies that are based in the metros and young people, but that they deliberately have a target to invest in other rural provinces, in particular township businesses, as well as rural provinces, women-owned, so you'll see that in the new programs, as we take those lessons, that by not insisting, by not putting a target, for a regional demographic participation, by not putting a target upfront on young people participation and women, it's not going to automatically happen. It has happened in other instances, but we have taken that decision that for every project that we approve, we will have targets that talks to regional demographic participation, gender, and so forth, so that the benefits are true across. How do we ensure that there is a viability? Yes, and continuity. So some of the beneficiaries, we work in this program. We also work with the likes of the IDC, so that some of the beneficiaries, as they graduate, as they come out of this project, and they want skills and so forth, that they can also be supported, elsewhere. So it's and also including benefits within the department, mostly through the Black Industrialist program. So it helps us to build that database of our register of the beneficiaries, because we then now know where are the Black enterprises, in which sectors, and so forth, but also that we let them know that as and when they grow, that there's other support that they can be able to get, so that they scale up and that they can graduate from where they are. I must apologize. I didn't get the question for the Honorable Moata. I think it's the time that the system kicked me out. If I can get that, Chair. Then the last question was on how many students in terms of demography. What we are doing currently, we're busy with an audit process where we'll be able to give an actual number. But our estimation is that through this pod that we have currently, at least 500, close to 500 students, mostly in the ICT, have benefited out of the program. And it's a mixture of both main and female. But what we're doing, similar to what that was done with regard to the Black Industrialist, wherein there was a audit report that was produced, we'll be able to provide that before June. That will cover all aspects, number of jobs, in which areas, and we'll be doing that not only for the current project, but also projects that were approved way back in 2009, 2010. So it will be, a collection of information that will show, how the EMP program over the years has been able to create opportunities for different enterprises, as well as the demographics. I think those were the questions that I had, Honorable Chair. If there's anything that I left out, I can be able to take. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Makuta. I see a hand from Honorable Mbuyani, and then we can go back to Honorable Muatsi to repeat a question. Honorable Mbuyani.
Okay, no, thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I think it's a follow-up in terms of the critical skills that were offered. Yes, demographically we have understood, and geographically we still need to check as to how many per each province and in the 500 that has been assisted. Further to that, considering the challenges of fronting in relation to triple B requirement, what are the methods the EEIP adopted to assist the triple B commission to avert the continuation of this practices of fronting, Chairperson? And also, as part of South African goal to intensify through industrialization, you just want to check, man, to what extent does the multinational procure some of their product locally as we talk of localization? Thank you for the opportunity, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mbuyani. Can I just check in with Honorable Muatsi if she can repeat her question?
Yes, Chairperson.
Her sound was also not very good. Okay. Thank you. Proceed.
I was saying, what are the estimated jobs to be created by the new applicant? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Muatsi. Mr. Makuta.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yes, with regard to fronting, the EIP program, because of the way it's designed, that requires that the the multinational must submit all the information, financial statements. As I said, we also have the IDC. For example, we bring them on board to do due diligence and other things. So because of the nature of the process, there's been little room for the multinational to do fronting. I'm talking only about the ERP process. However, if there were to be such, I think in terms of the requirement of the law, we will then hand over to the BE Commission or ask the BE Commission to assist us if there were to be such an instance where we feel that there is a need to do further investigation, whether the multinational is not, their books are not what they said they say they are. But today, we haven't had any kind of practice that warranted a thorough investigation with regard to possible funding. As I said, because of the nature of the program, the fact that implementation takes place closely with us, watched by us, it's something that the multinationals only leave a little room for the multinational to be able to engage in any kind of funding practice, unlike in other areas where, because the entities are left to implement on their own, which is the nature of the program. Some might be tempted to be able to want to conduct fronting. I think the BE Commission will talk about that in detail in the next presentation. So in terms of procurement of the products, especially for those that are in manufacturing, the likes of Caterpillar, that's the main focus, because we want to you know, to ensure that they procure local. But also, I must mention, we will not only in the process. So these are long-term relationships. We're not only focus on EIP because we know that EIP is just but one part of BEE and the broader economic transformation and industrialization process. So in some instances, or in most instances, when we engage with the multinationals with regard to EIP, it also extends beyond that to talk about, you know, some of the things that they can be able to do in the, you know, within their sectors. You know, whether it's things like logistics, you know, some multinationals ensuring that the transportation of their products, they also give local companies and not just give other multinationals that they would have or established businesses that they would have brought here in South Africa. So it extends beyond the just the EIP, but also to say within the broader transformation, localization, industrialization strategy of the company, what are the other opportunities that the companies are able to give or to implement over and above the EIP. The jobs to be created by the new
We're losing you, Mr. Makuta. We can't hear you now. We can't hear you, Mr. Makuta. No, we can't hear you, Spoh. Mr. Makuta? I can't hear you. That's better, yes. Just stay right where you are. Yes.
Okay.
Continue.
So we're saying that the new applications, we're unable to quantify the jobs at this stage, but I think once we are in the approval stage, we can be able to provide those. By the way, we believe that the Johnson & Johnson application, as well as Citibank, should be able to create the jobs at the level of what the likes of JP Morgan has committed to, which is at least 1,000 through the support to the SMMEs. But we will, once we have quantified those, these were the new application. The last time we met with the committee, and in this application, these are the number of jobs that have been projected. We can provide that, Chair, at the right time. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Makuta.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Can we now hand over to the Commissioner for the Triple BEE Commission's activities for 2020-21? Commissioner?
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you again for the opportunity for the Commission to share our activities for the last financial year. Chair, the presentation is really happening at a time that I think it's important for us to reflect as well in terms of what needs to happen on Triple BEE, especially in terms of its implementation going forward. So what we are grateful for is that the President made it clear also in the State of the Nation address last week, and he stated very, very, I think, openly that the present situation of deep poverty, unemployment, and inequality is unacceptable and unsustainable. Chair, it is against this background, in any event, that the BBB legislation was passed in 2003. And it is important for us to also acknowledge that almost 30 years after the democracy in South Africa and 18 years after the legislation was passed, we have not made a significant progress in terms of changing the landscape, in terms of the disparity in our economy. So the ownership patterns remain substantially the same as they were when we attained our democracy. And so this basically indicates that the reason and the basis for the implementation or the adoption of the BBB legislation is a transformation tool to change the ownership patterns, but also to ensure that Black people are economically empowered to participate in the economy. Those bases and reasons, they remain valid even today, perhaps even more valid, because you'll recall here that during the COVID pandemic, when it started, I think it became very clear that the inequalities in this country have actually been perpetuated also when we see the effects of some of these issues like the pandemic, but also in terms of the recent looting in July. These are indicating that the people that suffer the most are those people that are poor, people that are unemployed, and also those people happen to be Black people in the majority. So as we speak about the BBB legislation, I think we need to accept the historical part of this particular country, the apartheid legacy, and the need to actually accelerate the initiatives and interventions to bring about the change in our economy. So in 2003, the legislation was passed, and Parliament saw it fit in 2013 to amend the legislation to close some of the gaps that were identified by the DTIC when it did its review in 2011. So the BBB legislation itself is a constitutional imperative which was passed pursuant to section or clause 9 of our constitution, which talks to inequality. But over and above that, clause 217 of the constitution implores government to implement legislative measures as well as other programs to be able to drive the transformation in this country. That includes aspects relating to preferential procurement, which is aimed at bringing the majority of the South Africans into the mainstream economy, but also to give them access to opportunities that they otherwise would not attain if they were to be left alone, because the playing field is not level. So Chair, we have seen a number of transactions that took place from 2003. Some have been ownership transactions, but others have been transactions that are seeking to skill Black people, but also others that are intended to invest in the development and growth of Black entrepreneurs, as well as creating Black businesses that can actually participate in the economy and be able to compete with the existing players in the economy. Chair, our presentation, with your permission, I'm going to allow our COO to take us through just the operational aspects of the organization, and then I will then allow our acting head executive for compliance to take us through the performance against the APP, together with the highlights, and I will come back just to close the presentation and touch on the way forward that we propose as the commission in terms of our mandate. So I must introduce just the team that I have with myself. That is the COO, Nontokozo Nokpali Mboyi, which I've already alluded to, and then we've got Ms. Lindiwe Madonsela, who is our acting head for compliance. And then we've got Ms. Moipone Khaboisele, who is our head of investigations and enforcement. Then we have Thembakazi Tondashe, who is our director for organizational performance strategy, and we also have Ntate Mofihli Teleki, who is our director for stakeholder relations and communication. Chair, this is the team that we have today, and we'll try our best to respond to all of the questions that will be posed to us, but we do appreciate this opportunity to share with the committee some of the issues that have transpired since they gave this mandate as the parliament that passed this legislation and amended it in 2013. Chair, I've already indicated the background to the legislation, but I think before we get into the presentation and to give you the context of the entire process and where we are, I think it is important to also emphasize that when the policy for BBBE as well as the legislation was adopted, there was robust debates and discussions and consultation that was done. And part of this process enabled government and parliament at the time to actually put into the legislation the flexibility that will ensure that as much as the transformation legislation is put in place, it should not create unnecessary burden or regulatory burden on the entities that are operating in South Africa, both local and some that are multinationals that are external in nature but operating in South Africa. So how the BBB legislation introduced the flexibility is something that we need to reiterate all the time, because there are instances where people will then indicate that BBB is reverse racism or BBB is anti-investment and so forth. So it is important that we allude to this. The part that I'm talking about, although it's on my slide 14, I think it is important that I deal with it upfront. So when the BBB legislation was adopted by Parliament, it introduced what we called a balanced scorecard. A balanced scorecard which then had five key elements. The key elements are derived from our historical background. So there are five elements that Mr. Maphutha did allude to in her presentation, which is measuring ownership, management control, skills development, enterprise and supply development, as well as socio-economic development. These are the five key elements that, according to the BBBE legislation, all enterprises, both private and public in South Africa, including organs of state and public entities, are required to contribute towards to ensure that we advance the empowerment of Black people. So when we talk about empowerment, all of these elements contribute towards empowerment, but in different ways. So ownership will talk to the acquisition of stakes in existing entities or creation of new entities or enterprises in which Black people have control or are controlling. And it will go also then to management control. It will talk to the representation on the decision-making structures of companies and also enterprises and organs of state. So what it basically seeks at this level is that even where Black people are not the owners of the entities, but the boards and the executive positions should be reflective of the demographics of the country. This is particularly where also the employment equity legislation was instrumental. At the level of the BBBE legislation, it doesn't go across all of the occupational levels, but it focuses mainly on ensuring that the management control, that is the boards and the executive positions, are actually representatives of the demographics of the country. So the balanced scorecard enables entities to contribute across all of these areas to make sure that not only through ownership are Black people empowered, but they are empowered through all of the other elements around skilling, but also in terms of the investment in Black entities, to ensure that they're able to access markets and be able to sustain themselves. And this is expected from the existing players to be able to provide that support and open up the value chain to assist the Black enterprises for to enter and be able to operate profitably and be sustainable. And the reason why the BBBE legislation does that, Chair, is because our market structure historically is already characterized by a lot of restrictions, some caused by cartels, cartel behavior, some because of collusion, but others because of entrenched market tendencies around, you know, the value chains that are not transformed yet. So the BBB legislation basically implores every entity to be able to take initiative to bring on board Black enterprises into their value chain, ensure that they procure from them, but also ensure that they support them to be in a position to grow beyond being a supplier to them, but to actually be, you know, sustainable and independent entities that can run on their own. So the other aspect around the BBB legislation is that it is target-based, so entities are able to pace themselves to be in a position to meet the target. And also, in terms of the flexibility around the pacing of your targets, there are 8 different BBB levels, with the level 8 basically recognizing somebody who contributes just about 10% of the 100% that is expected from them. They are still regarded as being compliant. So it does allow entities to move from a non-compliant level into level 8 and 7 and up until they actually get to attain level 1, which is said to be at least those levels where all of the elements are adequately serviced by the entity. We also must acknowledge also that the legislation does take into cognizance the fact that other sectors may have unique features in that sector that may not be addressed through a generic type of a scorecard. So it allows for the entities in the various sectors where they believe that they need unique scorecards applicable to them, they can make the initiatives through what we call the sector codes. And at this point, we've got 10 sector codes that have already been approved and gazetted by the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition. So our sectors that believe that the generic codes do not serve them appropriately because they've got unique features that require customization, they are allowed to make an application to the minister, obviously using also the line departments, like in the financial sector. They would then work with the National Treasury to be able to make an application to the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition to recognize a sector code that will then take into account the unique features of their sector. So, Chair, the sector codes do allow for that. And the one thing that is important is that when the sector codes are being adopted, they are adopted also ensuring that they are aligned to the general codes, so that whatever deviation is there in the sector code is a deviation that has been motivated for and that has been considered by the minister before that approval is granted. Chair, the other aspect around the BBB legislation
just
is that
Commissioner, you haven't moved for slides, so I don't know if this is still background.
It is a background, Chair, but I will omit those slides in the presentation.
Okay.
But I'm just putting it as a background. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair,
so much.
Also just wanted to also indicate the flexibility also for multinational companies that are operating here in South Africa. The legislation does provide for what Ndadim Maphutha has already alluded to, which is the Equity Equivalent Investment Program. This basically recognizes that for those multinationals who are not allowed in terms of their policies or practicing their jurisdiction to do equity transactions in other jurisdictions, they are allowed to do what we call the equity equivalent. And Ndadim Maphutha has already talked to that issue. There are a number of multinationals that have already approached, as has been alluded, and we believe that this is the flexibility that needs to be emphasized at all times to emphasize that BBB does recognize the need to promote investment in this country and to ensure that we give the flexibility to the entities that might have difficulties. So we also have exemption provisions that are provided for. So entities can actually apply for exemptions and deviations to the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition. This is allowed for the organs of state and public entities to apply to the minister for an exemption or deviation where they believe that that deviation is required because of the nature of the area that they are overseeing or administratively responsible for. So So far we are aware of two applications that were done and granted by the Minister of Trade and Industry. That is the tourism one in relation to the Tourism Equity Fund, as well as the one relating to DMRE relating to some of the renewable energy projects that they are running. So it is allowed that the departments can actually apply for deviation. And the other aspect, Chair, that is also important to then emphasize as well is that for small enterprises, the legislation and the framework already grants an automatic recognition, which means that the entities that are at 10 million and below in terms of turnover or revenue, they are allowed to not be subjected to a verification process in order to reduce the cost of regulations for them. So they get automatic level in terms of that from level one to level four. So if it's a white owned company that does not have any black ownership and a small entity, it then has an automatic level four. And if it's at least 51% but not 100% black owned, it will have level two. And then if it's 100% black owned, it will have an automatic level one. So this is another introduction to ensure that the BBB legislation is not a burden in terms of an additional burden to the cost of doing business in South Africa. So I just wanted to emphasize those things, particularly because it is important for us to understand that. Our mandate in terms of the BBB Act is covered in Section 13F, and this mandate is, I want to be able to move the slide, Chair, apologies. Okay. So this is the mandate,
okay,
Chair.
Okay, so truly you don't, can you go into slide mode?
Okay, I have, yes, thank you very much, Chair. This is the mandate that we have, Chair. We will be covering now the activity according to this mandate in Section 13F of the BBB Act. Chair, I must indicate that when the BBB Commission was established in 2016, although we do not have the resources that we should be having to implement the mandate in the Act, we have performed across all of this mandate in the legislation. We have done our best to ensure that every aspect of our mandate is catered for and that we also meet the turnaround times that are required in terms of this mandate. We believe that ensuring that this mandate is executed is critical, especially in terms of the three other, I think the three main introductions during the amendments in 2013, one being to introduce the powers to investigate and deal with fronting practices as well as misrepresentation of BBB status, and also to address non-compliance issues through the investigative mandate. This is the mandate that never existed before the 2013 amendment. And this is the mandate which then became relevant when the BBB Commission was established as a regulator to conduct this particular mandate. And then the other mandate, Chair, that was critical in the 2013 amendment was the maintenance of a registry of Measure BEE transactions. This was aimed at ensuring that there is transparency around triple BEE and that we are able to measure and record the success of some of these triple BEE initiatives and be able to also identify the ones that are fronting practices and be able to eradicate them. The minister said the threshold for those Measure BEE transactions is 25 million, which means that every transaction that is entered into, which is an ownership transaction in this country for black people, it must be registered with the commission if it's at 25 million and above in terms of transaction value. The third one, Chair, which is the last one that I regard also as an important introduction, is to the power or the mandate to receive and analyze compliance reports. These are annual compliance reports that should be submitted to the commission by all JSE listed companies, all CETAs, all organs of state, and all public entities. So these are an annual exercise, which then the commission, once it receives this report, then is able to assess and analyze how we are performing as a country in terms of driving transformation through BBBE. Chair, when we started, we then adopted the strategy, which is a compliance-driven strategy and the corrective enforcement strategy. This strategy is aimed at ensuring that as much as possible, we assist everybody, all the players, all the entities in the market to be able to understand the BBB requirements and be able to implement them correctly. Chair, we are pleased to indicate that this strategy around the compliance area is beginning to produce results. We are now having a proactive request from the industries to assist them in terms of implementing proper BBB initiatives. And we believe that this will go a long way because then at least we'll also be in a position to identify who the beneficiaries are and also where the beneficiaries feel undone or at least maybe abused in those relationships. They can feel free to approach the commission to intervene and assist to facilitate some resolution to some of the problems that they might be having. Our corrective enforcement strategy, Chair, we have not actually invoked it fully because we were focused on the compliance-driven strategy. However, with the level of non-compliance that we've identified, we have now invoked the corrective enforcement strategy. This is a strategy that will look at ensuring that we up our game in terms of enforcement and also ensure that we can have a number of cases that are prosecuted and so that some of the people or entities that continue to violate the legislation unabated can actually have some consequences for that. And unfortunately, at this point, the consequences are only criminal in nature in terms of the BBB, and we are ensuring that we can have the relevant engagement with the various criminal law agencies to be able to pursue some of the matters for proper prosecution. Chair, we'll then cover some of those issues then in terms of the activities as aligned to our mandate. But Chair, it's important again to mention that we do have the mandate for complaints, and our complaints we investigate within a period of 1 year in terms of the regulations. We must indicate at this point that the turnaround times of 12 months for our investigation is not met in all of the cases because of the complexity, but also because of the limited resources we have in terms of investigators. We also provide advisory opinion, which is free advice to all entities, big and small, and we are happy to actually guide on this, and we normally have meetings with stakeholders to deal with this. And Chair, the Measure B transactions have already indicated we've got 90 days to assess them and give the parties feedback in terms of whether we believe that their ownership deal is going to advance black people and is going to result in value in the hands of black people. The compliance reports, based on the compliance reports, we produce the national status report, which the Deputy Minister has already alluded to, which then gives the country an indication of how we're doing. We realize that as much as there are specific activities around BBB and initiatives that are there and are happening, it cannot be just a bean counting exercise. Whatever is happening needs to make an impact in the overall outlook of the country's economy. So meaning that we should see a move in terms of the ownership patterns, but we should also see a move in terms of black people entering the mainstream economy. So those are the processes that we have, and we do appreciate the fact that the take-up is good, but we do have a problem with non-compliance around the submission of annual reports by the companies as well as the organs of state and public entities. Chair, let me just hand over to the COO to then just cover just the operational issues and our compliance to some of the legislation that is in place, and then we'll then move on to Ms. Madonsela to then take us through the APP.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ntuli. Proceed.
Good morning, everyone. As already introduced by the Commissioner, I'm Nontoko Zonokwali Mboyi. My presentation is going to cover the human resources, finances, and the organizational overall performance, and that will be starting on slide number 5. In terms of our staff complement, at the end of 2020-21, the BEE Commission was sitting at 39 officials, 54% of whom were females, and 46% were males. And then also women at SMS level sitting at 86% against the 50% target, which obviously shows that we are really doing well in that area. And then in terms of people with disabilities, unfortunately on that area we're not doing very well because we're sitting at 0% against the target of 2%. As the B Commission, we pride ourselves in terms of having a such number of women at SMS, but obviously we would have loved to improve in terms of having the gender balance at SMS level so that our boardroom can be, you know, balanced, and obvious, and also the people with disabilities, to make sure that we are at least at the target or even more as we would have loved to. But unfortunately, the circumstances under which we are operating do not permit for us to even recruit one more official because of the situation that we're in, which pertains to the non-listing of the B Commission as a public entity. And then I'm going to move still on the resources, just to paint a picture of how the situation is within the commission. I'm going to move to slide number 6, wherein we've broken down in terms of our divisions that the organizational structure came with, obviously being informed with the strategy that was approved for the B Commission. There we have the office of the commissioner that is sitting at the, okay, in fact, the total approved staff establishment of the commission is 113 officials, but at the moment we are sitting at 20 officials. I know someone will be asking a question to say, previously you said 9 and then now you are saying 20. The 20 that we're referring to are the officials that approved in terms of the staff establishment or the organizational structure, and then the 19 officials are additional to the staff establishment because as part of our strategy, we adopted a strategy that wherein we wanted to employ as much trainees as possible so that we'll be having a talent pool. So then hence we're having 19 officials that initially joined the B Commission as interns and were ultimately absorbed into the B Commission, hence the difference between the 39 that I spoke to earlier on and the 20. So in terms of the breakdown, the Office of the Commissioner has 5 approved positions, but only 2 positions are filled at the moment. The Organizational Strategy and Performance has 15 positions, and only 2 are filled at the moment. Compliance Division, we're having 25 positions approved to execute the mandate, but only 3 officials are employed at the moment. Research, we have 12 positions, but we have nothing at the moment. And then investigations and enforcement, we have 17, and we only have 6 officials. Legal support and prosecutions, we have 8, and we don't have any position or any incumbent at the moment. And then operations, we have 31, and we're operating with only 7. But as I'm saying, in terms of the vacancy rate of the approved positions against the field, we're sitting at a vacancy rate of 82%. Which means that of the approved staff established, of the approved organizational structure which was meant to execute the mandate of the commission, we are sitting at only 18% filled positions. And I think one can attest to the fact that the current situation is very severe, because you find that, for instance, one position, one official is performing functions that would have been performed under normal circumstances by 5 to 7 officials. And as I indicated to say, I think the main problem that we're having, or all our challenges, they emanate from the non-listing of the B Commission, because what has happened is that of the budget that the DTIC had ring-fenced or reprioritized to be allocated to the B Commission as an entity, all of that money ended up being allocated under goods and services, which is basically for traveling for projects, where with zero budget for commission of employees. Hence, we are not able to employ any, not even one official at the moment. So this poses challenges in terms of recruiting staff, as I indicated, because we are now accommodated within the DTIC compensation of employees budget, which was never planned to be like that. And as a result, whenever the DTIC, for instance, faces its own constraints in terms of financial resources, that also affects the B Commission in terms of when they are maybe having moratorium. And then these challenges do not only affect the ability to recruit and able to operate as an organization and achieve the best results that we would want to achieve in terms of our mandate, but they also affect the staff morale. As I indicated, that we'll find that one staff, for instance, area is performing functions of 5 to 7 people, and then obviously that shows that officials are so overworked, they are forever fatigued, and at some point you find that it's even difficult to take leave. And if you don't leave, if you take leave, your body will automatically at some point shut down, and in the process you forfeit your leave days, because you decide, you know, instead of taking leave, because I know when I come back, the work would have piled up. Let me just sit in the office, but there's no way you can be 100% effective. And in the process, I'm saying your leave days also, you'll forfeit them. So the officials, as it will be shown in terms of the presentation that I will give in the overall organizational performance, the officials are trying their best, but we can say that the situation is not sustainable. And we believe that there will come a time where officials will run out of the coping mechanisms, and some may even resort to exiting the organization, which obviously will be to the detriment of the commission in terms of the losing the skills, because the commission has invested so much. As we know that the e-space, when we started, which was a fairly new space, but now with the current officials, a lot of skill has been acquired, and experience also has proven that the market is not very fertile in terms of attracting the BE skills. Therefore, as a BE commission, we are sitting here and we appeal that an immediate intervention is needed to improve the current situation of the BE commission. I think maybe just to point again, to paint a picture to indicate the fact that we are sitting with zero compensation of employees. And I think also I indicated the fact that we, as a strategy that we adopted, we wanted to employ more graduates so that we can have that talent pool. At the moment, we are only able to recruit just 1 in 10, as opposed to when we started, and then when we still thought that there would be the future, better future for the commission, where we were appointed in number, hence we're having that 19 that we ultimately absorbed. And at the same time, to date, since the inception of the BE Commission, we have only managed to fill only 4 positions. And the rest of the 20 officials that I mentioned earlier on, they were transferred from the DGIC. Now, with the 19 that is additional that we had to request for their retention, one can only wonder how would the situation be had it not be that we given or granted approval to even absorb those interns. So as I'm exiting the human resources and moving to the finances, and I indicated that we are really appealing for an intermediate intervention to improve the situation, where officials will look forward to coming to work because they know that they're going to work and be productive as opposed to being fatigued forever. Now I'm moving to slide number 7, which is the finances. In terms of our finances, which relate to the period ending 31st March 2021, the original budget that was allocated to the BE Commission, which I indicated that unfortunately because of the non-listing of the BE Commission, all that money ended up being allocated to goods and services with zero budget for competitive employees. So we allocated a total of 54 million. However, because, I mean, as I indicated, we don't have resources to manage those projects and execute those projects at the end of the financial year, because, I mean, the department, because we're still using the pool of the DTIC budget, we ended up having 8.4 million of the budget, because if you don't, you're not able to spend money for whatever reason, it has to be allocated to other priorities. Hence, we ended up having that 8.4 million. And then in terms of expenditure for compensation of employees, we're sitting at 24.8 million against the zero budget, as I indicated. Whereas with goods and services, we managed to spend 5.3 million. And then overall, we were overspending by 21.7 million, majority of which is that commission of employees, of which we are operating at the zero budget. Now I'm moving, for the sake of time, I'm moving to the next slide, which is slide number 8, which talks to the organizational performance record. As I indicated, our challenges are the constraints around human resources, but I can say that despite those challenges and constraints, as a BE commission, you can see that in 2016, we managed to achieve 91% of whatever that we had set to perform or achieve in that year, with 9% not having been achieved. In the next financial year, 2017-18, we achieved 80%. 2018-19, it was 91%. 2019-20, 93%, 2020-21, 82%, and then in the first quarter of 2021-22, we managed to achieve 93%. So all in all, we can say that despite the challenges, we are doing well and at an average of 87.4 against the ATP. And all the milestones that we're not able to achieve had external dependencies. That will be my presentation. I'm going to quickly hand over to Ms. Madonsela to continue with the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, COO. Ms. Madonsela.
Good afternoon, Chosta. Good morning, Chair, and for all the honorable members. My presentation on the next slide will be covering the performance of the BBB Commission against the set targets for the period that we were requested to cover, but also at the same time we'll be able to give an overview in terms of how the BBB Commission has performed. So basically the BBB Commission performed its work against the BBB framework, which framework seeks to make sure that there is empowerment of Black people and it uses the different pillars to make sure that there's empowerment of Black people. And particularly it will also cover the empowerment of other designated groupings. Now, the legislation will cover both the public sector and the private sector. When it comes to the public sector, it will look at their performance with regard to the certain economic activities that they perform as to how they are constituted, but also in terms of the specialized scorecard. Now, with regard to these slides, they will look at how the Commission has performed for a period of 5 years. And then now, in terms of what we do as the BBB Commission, we execute or implement two forms of strategies. We have the compliance-driven strategy as well as the enforcement and investigation strategy. Under the compliance-driven strategy, that is where we seek to assist the different implementers of the legislation on how to properly implement the legislation. Now, when we look at Program 1, it is where which the compliance strategy will be covered, which its ultimate purpose is to safeguard the outcomes of an inclusive economy. So when we look at firstly that our strategic objective in this area is to guide on the implementation of the legislation. And we do that using different outputs. We do that by providing advisory services. We offer the advisory opinions, which we look at the different initiatives or structures that entities need to put in place. They're able to present that to the Commission prior to implementation so that we can be able to advise them. As of the end of March 2021, we had issued 192 advisory opinions to entities which generally will cover aspects around ownership, sometimes skills development, and also enterprise and supply development. And then also we are able to provide clarifications. Clarifications is aspects relating to the day-to-day interpretation of the legislation, which normally the services are accessed by the verification agencies, all the consultants, including the entities that are implementing the legislation. And as of March 2021, we've issued 6,154 clarifications. And then we also, as the Commission, develop practice notes and guidelines. As we continue to execute our monitoring mandate, we do come against certain aspects that seek further explanation so that there is standard understanding within the market. And generally, we'll issue practice notes or we'll issue guidelines in terms of the processes of how the BBB Commission will operate. And then as of March 2021, we've issued 14 practice notes, including guidelines. And also, we try to simplify the legislation because it's generally technical, and some of the beneficiaries to the legislation are not necessarily able to understand the technical aspects. So we issue what we call educational material, normally the brochures, where we try to simplify certain aspects of the legislation as a way of increasing knowledge and making sure that there is understanding by those who are implementing as well as those who seek to benefit from the legislation. And we have, at the end of March 2021, managed to issue 16 brochures. Okay, I'm not sure if the presentation is still visible.
Sorry, we can't see the presentation. It seems as if we've lost the commissioner. No, she is still there. But maybe she must just reload the presentation. I see she does have follow status. Ms. Ntuli? Thank you. The presentation is back. Can you go to slide mode and then go to where we left off in terms of the presentation?
Okay. We were on slide 15.
Yes, continue. We are back there.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. So in terms of the process, it's just to say that we've issued 16 for the period of 5 years. And then under education and awareness, this is where we conduct our workshops to as part of increasing knowledge around BBBE and the role of the BBBE Commission as the regulator. And we have conducted 300. And then also as part of guiding on the implementation of the legislation, the Commission is mandated to receive and maintain a register of major BBBE transactions. These are ownership transactions on the value of 25 million and above. And these are the transactions that involve sale of shares to black people or sale of assets to black people. As of March 2021, for the 5 year period, we had received 528 transactions, and then of that, 380 were registered. And we've also noted that all those transactions that we have received, 148 trusts were involved. This is not to say that each transaction or this is the number of transactions, but the number of trusts that one was able to identify in the entire 528 that we received. And then 148 transactions as part of those received were rejected, and these were rejected and not registered simply because these transactions did not meet the registration requirement. In the next slide, we look at our program two. Which program two, apologies for that, before we get to the next slide, still as part of program one, we look at aspects relating to compliance reports. These are compliance reports that have to be submitted annually to the BBBE Commission by entities listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, as well as public entities on organ of state, including sectoral education and training authorities. Now, for the five-year review, on average, we've received 211 compliance reports, and in the next slide, we'll show the composition in terms of how entities are performing in terms of reporting. Then all those that we've received on an annual basis, we are able, on average, to assess 177. This is when we assess these reports and we're able to give feedback to those reporting entities with regard to how they're implementing the legislation. Now, looking at this five-year review, one notices that JSE-listed entities, on average, 153 of them are reporting. This is still not the majority of all of the JSE-listed entities. And then also, public entities or organ of state, on average, were sitting at 32, which is also not the correct reflection in terms of the numbers of organs of state and public entities. And as the BBBE Commission, there are certain measures that we have incorporated, including engaging with the JSEs as well as engaging with the different public entities to make sure that we sensitize them around this aspect. That also with regard to the public entities and organ of state, so the collaboration of the BBBE Commission with the Auditor General, who currently when the audit compliance, they also audit whether organs of state and public entities are submitting their compliance report to the BBBE Commission. And resulting from that, we've seen a slight increase. And then also with regard to program two, where we now implement the investigating and enforcement strategy, where we then respond to the different complaints that have been lodged by the BBBE Commission, we are able to make sure that we have handled 483. Driven. Sorry, Chair, can you still hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. We lost you for a while, but you ended by 423.
Okay.
Continue. No.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think over... Okay. 423, this then is the output or the outcome with regard to our investigation mandate to say for this period, as the Commission, either through response to a formal complaint that has been lodged or either through an initiation. Yes, Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, apologies for that. And also, one of our powers or what we are also able to do in terms of the B legislation when we are executing the investigation and enforcement strategy is to also facilitate the different complaints through the alternative dispute resolution mechanism. And as of March 2021, for the 5 year, we've been able to resolve 22 matters through the alternative dispute resolution mechanism. And then also, as the Commission, as we investigate, we do come across matters that do have criminal aspects in them, and we also do come across matters that also fall under the scope or mandate of other regulatory institutions. Hence why we are mandated to also refer those particular matters. So as of March 2021, we have referred 26 cases either to other regulatory institutions such as the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission together with the National Prosecuting Authority through CEP. And under Program 3 and 4, that is where we are focusing on the research part of the B Commission together with our collaboration with other stakeholders to advance transformation. In terms of research, on an annual basis, we issue the National Status Report and Trends on BBBE, and to date, we've issued 5. And the other report that we issue is the Major BBBE Transaction Report, which looks at those major transactions that the BBBE Commission would have received. And to date, we have managed to issue 2 of those reports, and work is continuing around those aspects. With regard to collaboration to advance transformation, we identify entities whose mandate will complement that of the BBBE Commission, as well as all those other institutions which we can tap into their various programs to also advance BBBE in terms of increasing knowledge, also in terms of raising awareness around the aspects of compliance. And to date, we've entered into 10 MOUs. Some of those institutions relate to the Competition Commission because some of those transactions that are either lodged with them will have aspects relating to BBBE. We've also entered into one with the CIPC because of the issues around the Companies Act and aspects around corporate governance, which the BBBE Commission must also promote. Now, these slides will look specifically in terms of our performance against the 2020-21 financial year. We'll look at the end of the financial year how the BBBE Commission performs against the particular targets that were set. Now, looking at the first part around the first strategic objective around guiding BBBE implementation, the performance first performance measure is that the number of days that the BBBE Commission takes to provide advice. Now, in that part, you've got 2 presentation to the advisor opinion, which is supposed to be 30 days, and we also have clarifications that are supposed to be 5 days. With advisor opinion, we're able to issue 27, which was still within time, as well as 1,613 written clarifications, which was still also within time. And still under the same output, with the performance measure regarding the number of practice notes or guides that were supposed to be issued, the target was 2 annually, but at the end of the financial year, we're able to issue 2, which one talks to the BBBE service standards and the one talks to the completion of the compliance metrics, which is one of the documents that needs to be submitted when compliance reports are being submitted to the Commission. And when it comes to brochures that are supposed to be developed and published, the target was 2, but we were able to exceed the target and issue 5 because of the need that was identified. And that will talk about aspects around enterprise and supply development, joint ventures, loss or sale of shares, sale of assets and private equity funds. These are the principles that are embedded in terms of the BBBE legislation. In terms of transactions, we are supposed to be assessing the transactions within a period of 90 days. We had received 42, of which 8 were rejected, 44 were registered, and at the end of the financial year, all the 44 were assessed. With compliance reports, as we received them, we are supposed to assess them within 90 days. So we are able to receive 166 compliance reports, and we assessed 163 at the end of the 2021 financial year, and the three that were remaining were still within the 90 days period for assessment. And also moving to the second part in terms of the strategic outcomes, looking at the implementation of the corrective and enforcement strategy, and the legislation requires that as a target on average, we produce 80% of our investigation reports within a period of 12 months upon receipt of a complaint. As a Triple B Commission, in that financial period, we received 145 complaints, of which 81.4% of them pertain to fronting. We were able to issue 46 notices of investigation where we identified merit for us to be able to investigate. And 88 of those cases when we issued notices of non-investigation because we could not find merit to investigate, or other those issues were not necessarily Triple B related. And as part of the investigation, we were able to issue three summons to call for certain submission of documentation which are critical to the investigation. And for this particular period, we are required to say when we identify cases for alternative dispute resolution, at least we conduct that, and also 80% of them can be referred to other regulatory institutions. So for this period, we were not, there was no ADR that was facilitated, and at the same time, there was none of the conditions in relation to ADR that had to be monitored. With regard to referrals, we were able to refer two cases for the financial period in question to other regulatory institutions, such as the CIPC, and then also there were none cases that were identified to be referred for prosecution to the National Prosecuting Authority or to CEPS. In the next slide, we look at the other programs as we presented. In terms of our research and also reports on the state of transmission, as a target, we are supposed to issue two sector reports that we produce annually, looking at the data that we received from the compliance report together with the data that we received from the Triple B portal system. Therefore, we're able to issue two reports according to the target that we have set. And when it comes to national status report, the target was one, and we're able to issue one at the end of the financial year. And then also with regard to rebuilding stakeholder relations, the target was that we need to monitor those that were existing at the time. But we are able to monitor those and execute certain joint any activities with those partners. But at the same time, we had identified two new partners that the Triple B Commission could conclude MOU with, and that is the Companies Tribunal as well as the Public Protector South Africa, to advance aspects around compliance and to also increase knowledge through those collaborations in terms of Triple B. And we also had to renew two MOUs that were coming to a conclusion, and that is with the CIPC as well as with the Commission of Employment Equity. And with regard to the last program in terms of developing capability and capacity for the Triple B Commission to deliver on its mandate, and the target there in terms of our ICT strategy that we have developed, we are supposed to develop an integrated database for the Triple B Commission. This is where a warehouse in terms of the data that the Triple B Commission is a custodian of, which is the data that it will either emanate from investigation or emanate from major transaction or compliance report. At the end of the financial year, the integrated database was implemented. And then also together as part of building capability of the Triple B Commission, there are certain databases that we have identified that are critical to the work of the Commission. And part of that, it is the one-stop portal, including the events and management system, because the part of the Commission is to raise awareness, and that requires that we have systems in place. At the end of the financial year, there was a delay with regard to the implementation of the WhatsApp portal, which resulted as a result of the installation of the servers. As members may be aware that the Triple B Commission was operating outside the DTI, which were located at the Centurion office, a subletting from the National Gambling Board. And due to COVID and the need to implement the particular measures that were set, we had to relocate to the DTIC campus. Hence why there was a delay, because we had to move the service. And then also the procurement of the event management system was at the final stage, because we were in the process of signing the SLA with the service provider. The certificate portal system was implemented and is currently being maintained. The other part in terms of building capability talks to the training of the DBB official staff. The target was training of 60% of the staff. At the end of the financial year, 95% of officials were trained. In terms of the number of graduates, our target is one. That target is set and determined based on the staff complement of the DBB commission. And at the end of the financial year, we did have and recruit and maintain one graduate or one intern. In terms of these slides are just highlighting some of the aspects in terms of performance that may not directly be incorporated in the previous slides. The highlight is that as the DBB Commission, we were consistent in making sure that we publish the national status so that we can understand how the picture of transformation in the South African economy, together with the picture of ownership by black people in the South African economy. And also as the DBB Commission, what we did at year three of the institution, we appointed DNA Economics to conduct an independent impact assessment study so that we can be able to determine the impact of the institution in the economy. And we have found that with only 45% of the required budget and 16% of the staff, the commission was able to effectively attend to 74% of its complaint within the set time frame of 12 months. And also in terms of the different stakeholders who raised or indicated their views with regard to the institution, we noted that 59% of the verification agencies appreciated the existence of the regulator and then understood that its existence has been able to bring about the needed alignment with regard to DBB interpretation. And also in March 2021, before the close of the financial year, we had an annual conference where we were specifically focusing on skills development. Skills development is one of the priority elements in terms of the DBB Code of Good Practice. And in that conference, we were able to reach 400 people and then also those who had logged in through the Zoom platform. And then we were also able to reach 11,000 those who had logged in through the other social media platforms. And we were also able to reach or conduct 40 awareness sessions with regard to the provinces that are identified. And we also did conduct interviews with certain media houses as part of raising awareness or responding to some of the issues either in relation to what the DBB Commission has released in terms of its media relations. And then also, as part of the Skills Development Conference, the Commission has adopted a culture of recognizing those entities who make an effort to properly implement the legislation. The same thing was done with the March 2021 conference. These entities were identified based on how they're implementing the DBB legislation or the policy initiatives that they were able to communicate that can enhance the effective implementation of the skills development element. And that is the Association of DBB Professionals, a company called MNC Accounting, a USASA Student Financial Aid Program, as well as INSIGA Consulting. And we're able to also issue 7 brochures to simplify the legislation, and then also the conclusion of the MOUs with new partners. And at the same time, we're able to issue a media release to make sure that we advise properly on the status of the DBB legislation. Following the High Court ruling that was issued in November 2020 that looked at the validity of the pre-qualification criteria that was set in the DBPSA. Following that court judgment, we noted that there was confusion in the market because there was a view that the High Court ruling suspended the DBB legislation. Therefore, we had to clarify that the High Court ruling did not suspend the DBB legislation, and the entities that want to advance transformation and exceed the targets that have been set in the DBB legislation need to follow the processes that are allowed for and provided for in the DBB legislation, because the legislation allows organs of state and public entities to exceed the targets and also to deviate from those targets if only they receive approval from the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition. The next slide is looking in terms of the outreach of the DBB Commission with regard to the awareness sessions that we would have conducted. to reach rural and underdeveloped areas. And these particular programs are done directly by the Triple B Commission or in partnership with the other institutions. For example, in some of the areas, we would partner with the Department of Economic Development and Tourism in the KZN province. So this is how the commission has managed to reach rural and underdeveloped areas. There is no province that the commission has not been able to reach. However, we do know that more is still required, because when you look at the numbers, you find that there is more that was done with the other provinces or not. And this is still ongoing and continuous work. In the next slide, we also continue to look at the highlights in terms of the compliance work. So this looks at the Triple B compliance, major Triple B transactions, in terms of how we are performing. So we look at the fact that in the 5 years, we indicated that 522 was received. We had those that were rejected. And then we wish to indicate that some have been reset for investigation because they did not align to the remedial recommendations. Others are still open because there's still consideration of what the Triple B Commission had advice on. And the list of these transactions is being updated on a regular basis and available on the Triple B Commission's website. And also in terms of the mandatory compliance reporting, as the Triple B Commission, in the next slide, we're able to depict in terms of how performance in terms of submission of reports has been rolled out. We would note that I will just focus on the 2020 year. We received 314 reports from JC listed entities and only 290 from organs of state, which means that there's still a lot more to be done, because of the fewer the reports, it means that we are not able to give out a proper status in terms of transformation. And then also when you look at the B levels, we note that 55% of JC listed entities, they are rated between a level 1 and a level 4, and 33% of organs of state are also rated within that category. And then with regard to level 5 to non-compliance, we've noted that 45% of the JC listed entities, they would fall within the level 5 and non-compliance, with organs of state maintaining a very high percentage of 67%. And one thing that we noted for the period of 2021 is that the compliance dropped because of the impact of COVID-19 on entities. There were entities that were not able to fully complete the initiatives that they had identified for that particular period because of the different levels of lockdown that we experienced as a country. And also there were entities that did not subject themselves to verification. Now, this slide just gives us a holistic picture in terms of the state of compliance with regard to all the elements of Triple B in. For example, if we focus on the 2020 year, we know that black ownership was sitting at 31%, which is not a good picture when one compares to that from 2017. And black women were sitting at 15%, wherein we noted a slight increase. And then also on average on the JSE, the black ownership there is sitting at 28%. And then when it comes to 100% black owned entities, at the year of 2020, there was none, which the number dropped from 3% in 2019. With regard to management control, on average, we are sitting at 67%, with JSE entities sitting at 28%, and with organs of state and public entities leading with 65.8%. When it comes to skills development, the average there in terms of performance, 60% of the skills budget is being implemented, with the JSE listed entities leading at 64%, however, audience of state only sitting at 32%. When it comes to aspect of enterprise and supply development, the average performance there or overall performance is 61%, with JSE sitting at 61% and audience of state sitting at 68%. On the last element, the average performance is 90%, with JSE accounting for 93% and audience of state with 33%. The next slide is looking at the highlights in terms of the investigation and enforcement role of the Triple B Commission. In terms of this particular slide, as the Triple B Commission, as the year of 2021, we had received a total of 210 complaints. Sorry, we have received 909 complaints, of which 210 was carried from the previous financial year. And we recorded the fact that we dealt with 145 complaints and were able to issue 52, were able to issue findings in 52 cases, and 88 of them was non-investigation. Also, with regard to our investigation mandate, we've noted that there are sectors wherein they are leading in terms of the number of complaints, and that is the mining sector, construction, ICT, as well as transport, because generally in this sector, they would record most of the complaints that we receive. And again, as part of our investigative mandate as the DBBU Commission, we were able to successfully defend the review of the findings that we've issued against CRRCE Local, which is a company that took the DBBU Commission's investigative report for review. And this is a company which looked at the joint venture that was entered into by a Chinese-based company and NBC Consortium, which is the black partners, with regard to the Transnet locomotives contract. And this matter was also referred to SARS because there were aspects relating to the violation in terms of the tax rule. And as the DBBU Commission, we also identified the prevalence of fronting within the fishing industry. This particular case, Pepe Keke, against African tuna traders, we have since referred it to the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries, wherein we noted that the black employees were fronted so that the entity can be able to receive the fishing license. So we referred this so that this matter is also taken further and looked into in more detail. And as a DBBU Commission, we're also defending certain matters also relating to the review of the investigation report of the DBBU Commission. Some of those entities is Kalko Traders Limited, Sasol Oil, as well as the Astra Group and others who are seeking to set aside the findings of fronting that were made by the DBBU Commission. And of recent in that year, we also issued findings against VTI Day Consulting. In this particular, it was in relation to misrepresentation. We have also found that there's a prevalence of misrepresentation around the qualification of black people. The DBBU legislation has particularly provided a definition of who is a black person, and it's specific that it's Africans, Indians, and colors who are South African by birth or by descent. And it also recognizes naturalization, and it's specific that it should be person naturalized before the 24th of April 1994 or on or after that particular date. So we've noted that in this case that appears, there were persons who had claimed to be black, but they did not satisfy that definition. And findings were specifically made against those particular companies. And then also, as we're getting to the end of my part of the presentation, we also want to indicate the cases that the DBBU Commission has successfully managed to complete its investigations for the 2021 financial period. And that will be in the next slide. In this particular slide, this slide is just reflecting these cases that the DBBU Commission managed to complete their investigation. In some matters, we did make adverse findings. In other matters, we did not do that. And then also, in this particular list, there are cases that we have bolded. These are the cases wherein the parties or the responding end parties have approached the court to review the findings of the DBBU Commission, and the DBBU Commission is defending those particular matters. The same with regard to the next slide. It is still a continuation of those particular cases that the DBBU Commission has concluded, which includes those that are currently on review. And then I would like to hand back over to the Commissioner. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Madonsela, Commissioner. Commissioner Ntuli, you are muted. Sorry, Commissioner.
you were going to take us through the legislative gaps and then conclusion and way forward. Commissioner, you are muted. Oh, you're unmuted now. Continue.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. My apologies about the technical glitches there. Chair, we have already covered then the activities as well as some of the highlights, and we have tried to give you an overview of the five-year period so that we can at least make a proper assessment of how we're doing and also have a specific focus on the year that you requested us to cover. Chair, just in conclusion, our presentation has already given us in terms of the status. As a country, Chair, we have seen a movement based on our national status report, which we produce on an annual basis. We've seen movement in terms of ownership, as well as some of the other elements in terms of the contributions that the entities are doing. However, Chair, it is important for us to recognize that the movement is very slow. By way of example, Ms. Madonsela alluded to the 31% black ownership that is reflected for 2020. But if you look at where we started in the 2016 baseline, we're at 32%. So which means that the 2020 figure is actually a regression as opposed to an improvement. However, if we compare it to 2017, of course, it will be a movement from 27% to 31%. So the movement, Chair, is not very significant. But, Chair, I think the one thing that we also must indicate is that there is a great opportunity to increase the contributions by public sector as well as the private sector entities in terms of enterprise and supply development, skills development, as well as ownership in terms of, because they are priority elements. During COVID-19, when it started, we saw a number of small enterprises closing. But what was important to note was that a number of entities who ought to have contributed for that particular year did not deploy the enterprise and supply development funds that they had because the activities were affected by COVID-19. So it is important that as we then look ahead to look at the impact that we can make, that we coordinate better the available funds and assist the private sector and the public sector to be able to deploy those funds within that particular year so that we can assist a lot of enterprises, especially small and medium enterprises that were affected. Chair, in terms of just the our enforcement area, I think it is important to also allude to the fact that we have managed to call entities to account in terms of some of the fronting practices. And Chair, on this one, Ms. Madonsela has alluded and shared some of the cases for that particular year, but Chair, you would have noticed that we've also made inroads in terms of finalizing the recent investigation against G4S, which was lodged by employees of G4S who were made shareholders since 2006 and on the basis that they were not participating as well as getting any dividend. Those types of matters we have finalized and we will be publishing from time to time. But Chair, in this regard, in terms of our findings, there is a limitation in terms of the legislation. The legislation does not allow the B Commission to publish its findings where an entity has indicated that it intends to take us on review. So what we are finding, every time we issue final findings to an entity, the usual line that will come back will be, we've got instructions from our clients to take the commission on review. So that will then sit on our books that they are going to take us on review, and they will take their own time. But what we have used as a guidance is the period of 180 days, which is allowed in terms of the PAJA to be able to review a particular decision. So we allow them that period, but we can only then start publishing after the 180 days has lapsed. So this particular provision is used to actually frustrate also the mandate of the commission in terms of communicating the findings that it has made. But we have successfully communicated a lot, and a lot of the summaries of the cases that we have finalized are being communicated so that we can also raise awareness of the practices that should not be happening. Chair, we also appeal for the enhancement of the due diligence by the private sector, but as well as the public sector entities in terms of identifying the fronting practices and also bringing them to the attention of the commission. And we have seen a number of entities that are very instrumental and that on an ongoing basis they send us the alerts We've got ESCOM, which has been very, very active in this area, checking all of the misrepresentation of BBB status. I think particularly because they had instances where false BBB status were submitted for serious and big contracts within ESCOM. But we also have Vodacom, Tiger Brands in the private sector, whose managers are really looking at uprooting funding, and they do refer those matters to us. But also in terms of some of the government departments, the Western Cape government has been referring a number of BBB funding cases as well as misrepresentation, and they've been doing that on a consistent basis as well. So I would like to appeal to entities to really play their due diligence role and identify those things so that they can be addressed and so that we can present further funding practices. Chair, in terms of just the last aspect that I wanted to allude to, Chair, around our report, the MEDA-B transactions and analysis report, Ms. Matonsela has already taken us through the transactions that we've assessed and the percentages that are rejected, as well as those that are referred for investigation. But I think on my side, Chair, it's important to indicate that the BBB legislation intended for black enterprises and black entrepreneurs to be able to be afforded funding both from the private sector as well as the public sector to be able to enter and grow and create and grow their own businesses. So in terms of the cut around MEDA-B transactions, it means that the black entrepreneurs need to have funding to be able to acquire stakes in the existing enterprises. So what is happening right now, what we're picking up is that there is not a lot of funding that is available from the private sector as well as the public sector. And in terms of the private sector, a lot of funding that is available is vendor financing, but then it comes with a number of restrictions. So we are trying to do our best to also remove some of those restrictions that affect the ownership rights of the black entrepreneurs. But I think it is important that we increase the availability of simple and more or less cumbersome type of funding to be extended by the private sector. If we look at the 2 years that we've assessed, we've seen that the vendor financing is high in terms of about 32%, but then the bank loans follow in around 19%. And so we believe that there's still a need to increase that, but to also make the funding much more easier for entrepreneurs to be able to participate. But lastly, we also think that the government side of area, which is the funding institutions of government, need to also enhance that, because we only have less than 5% that is contributed by them. So of the 188 billion as well as the 112 billion for the two respective years, we found that the public sector only contributed about 5% of that funding. Chair, in conclusion, would like to also bring to your attention what we brought to the attention of the committee in 2016, that there are certain constraints that are inherent in the legislation that we would like the committee to consider. We have also submitted them to our department, as the Lions Department, to ensure that they incorporate them in the proposed amendments to the legislation. We do believe that we just need to strengthen certain aspects, not to necessarily overhaul the framework, because otherwise then there would be a challenge in terms of implementation on the basis that there's uncertainty and there's too many changes. So, but we believe that we need to tighten up the institutional framework. We need to create a system that makes it easy for us to finalize and prosecute funding cases. At the moment, they are reliant on the criminal process purely, and it is not effective. So we'd like the committee to consider the adoption of the framework that we've used previously for the competition authorities in terms of the framework with the tribunal that focuses specifically on those matters, and so that we can get speedy consequences for non-compliance as well as remedies for the people that are prejudiced. So we also think that it will be also important to just enhance the framework to add administrative processes, like where we can have administrative penalties that can be imposed without going through the criminal process. The criminal process can go on its own, which can then result in conviction. But I think the administrative penalties will ensure that we are able to recover immediately funds and also impose fines on the entities that have violated the Act. But lastly, we also wish for the the powers to be able to stop behavior as it happens. At the moment, there's no provision for compliance notices, which is something that is effective in respect of all of the regulatory frameworks. You need to be able to stop certain behavior immediately to avoid damage or harm that could be detrimental to the economy. So those are some of the issues that we wanted to just bring to your attention and to also request the committee to also consider including consequences for non-compliance. For instance, in terms of submission of reports, there are no specific penalties for any entity. Unlike with the employment equity legislation, there are fines for entities who are not submitting their annual reports. So we need to be able to introduce those things so that we can also ensure that we enhance the consequences. Chair, in conclusion, we just want to indicate as a way forward that we have identified certain systemic issues that are happening in the markets from time to time. One particular one is around the owner-driver scheme. We're receiving multiple complaints around that. And because of that, the Commission will be running formal hearings, and where some of these entities and some of the owner-drivers can be able to approach the panel and actually present their cases so that the panel can make recommendations that not only look at a single case, but that can provide guidance in respect of all of the cases or the tendencies or the practices that we find that relates to owner-driver schemes. And as well as the worker schemes, the employment ownership schemes, there are a number of cases that we're receiving that, and we also intend to run a hearing in respect of those matters so that we can get more comprehensive recommendations. Chair, we want to stop at this, and to again, thank you very much for the opportunity, Chair. We hope that we have been able to give you a sense of what we are doing.
Thank you very much, Commissioner, for that very extensive presentation. I now open the floor to members to engage with the presentation. I see Honourable Cuthbert and then Honourable Mulder. I'll recognise other hands as I proceed. Honourable Cuthbert.
Chair, my apologies, Chair. May we ask Ms. Julie to stop sharing the document, Chair?
Thank you. Over to you, Honourable Cuthbert.
Thanks very much, Chair, and Happy New Year to everybody. My apologies for not being at last week's meeting, but it's good to see everybody. Chair, just in respect of the presentation that we received, what I find quite strange is the fact that this is a compliance agency, but they themselves don't meet, you know, the bean counting criteria that's been set for them in the Employment Equity Act. So I find it rather disingenuous that they are the ones going out and enforcing compliance on BEE transactions and, you know, the composition of boards, ownership and the like, but they themselves don't necessarily have that down to a T. The other issue that I would like to address to the Commission directly is to ask what kind of formal interaction have they had with the Ministry and the Department in order to address their human resource challenges? And I mean, how has it been allowed to get as bad as what it is? I mean, that's an extremely high vacancy rate, and you might as well shut up shop at that rate, because it seems as if you've got somebody to make tea, somebody to answer phones, and somebody to work on a computer at this rate. So it doesn't seem as if, you know, the organization itself is, you know, functioning optimally. And I imagine that there are a few business owners that are probably grateful for the fact that it doesn't operate in the way that it should. I think the other issue that I really want to get an opinion from the Commission on is how they view recent actions by the Competition Commission. And I'll use one example of Grand Parade and them trying to sell off Burger King to a multinational. And the point I want to try and get to is, you know, it doesn't help to superficially have 100% black ownership, but if that same black business is trying to sell off a non-performing business, they're blocked from doing so because it will, you know, artificially change the composition of the management of that. Would you rather that that particular company sits with a non-performing business just, you know, for the sake of bean counting once again? or, you know, are there any economic considerations that take into account, or that are taken into account? And I'd like to understand what the Commission's view is on that kind of practice, because we've seen it in other instances, and it may not necessarily be beneficial to black businesses at the end of the day. So I'd be very interested to hear what the Commission has to say. Then the last question, I believe that the minister, the deputy minister, rather, is still on this meeting, and I'd like to pose a particular question to her, and that is regarding, you know, how many more supply side measures do we actually have? We've got double B, triple E, we've got EE, we've got preferential procurement, we now have localization, amongst a host of other tariffs and, you know, market barriers. But how many of them do we need before we realize that we need to correct the supply side, you know, of our economy? So education, simplifying regulation, making sure that we have a consistent energy supply and basic service delivery. Those are really the things that allow for an environment for business to thrive. And as you would have heard in the SONA, President Ramaphosa himself said that, you know, governments do not create jobs. The private sector does, but it seems as if the legislation and regulations, as well as the focus of this government, impedes that ability. And I mean, it's evidence to say that, you know, we sit now with an unemployment rate of north of 40%. We are not able to reach the kind of growth levels that, you know, we so desperately need on an annual basis. So when does that mental shift actually take place for us to realize that no matter how many demand-side measures we've put in place, they just aren't effective at, you know, solving the unemployment crisis and ultimately reducing, you know, the desperate levels of poverty that many South Africans face in our country. So if I can just get some comments on those questions, I'd appreciate it, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Cuthbert. Honourable Mulder.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Commissioner. You will remember from last year, Chair and colleagues, that the Freedom Front Plus has got a very strong view about triple B, and I also share that view. I would like to see the economic empowerment of all people in South Africa, black, white, and all who live in it. I've got nothing against black economic empowerment. On the contrary, I'm involved with organizations who are keeping themselves busy with that. The problem is that, and I know the commissioner might will differ, most probably differ. Overall, Triple B has not worked. And I believe that where we are today is, in fact, a disaster. South Africa has grown slower. The whole South African economy has grown slower than all regions of the world. And more than 50 to 60% of all South Africans, or the South African population, is poor. We've heard a lot of contents in yesterday's speeches, and Arnold Cuthbert has actually said it all. Now, the gap in South Africa between rich and poor is the highest in the world, and the inequality has increased since 1994, according to the World Bank. We all know that. Commissioner Ntuli acknowledged about a couple of years ago, I think it was around about 2018, that this is not where South Africa should be, but she denied that Triple B is actually not working, and that it should actually be on the control side, more strict managing, etc., etc. Now, Honourable Cuthbert has also expanded on that. Now, I want to ask the Commissioner, I've got three questions. Commissioner, do you really, or do you acknowledge that Triple B has not lifted up to expectations up to now? It's actually a simple question, and I'll just kind of repeat it. Do you acknowledge that Triple B has not up till now lived up to expectations? And then secondly, do you agree that South African economy has not grown like other economies in the world? And certainly then the gap between rich and poor in South Africa is the highest in the world. Triple B has brought about lots of billionaires, to the disadvantage of the poorest of the poor. And the reason why I ask that question is you recognize that a lot of crime, state capture, and corruption has been committed in the name of BBBE. And I really want to see, without expanding and going into the detail of the report, it will be a glad day if BBBE could be phased out. I'm not going to comment on the contents of the report. My own son is not able to work in South Africa because of BBBE. Ironically enough, he's welcome in Rwanda, but not in South Africa. So just that three questions. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Honorable Mulder. Honorable Burns Namashe.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Maybe, Chair, I should start by welcoming the presentation by the Commission, and also indicate that although we do observe that there may be challenges in terms of the application of policy and these transformative instruments. But the reality, Chair, is that there are private sector captains who seem to exploit the opportunity, especially the fact that indigenous people are historically disadvantaged and have been excluded from economy, and as such they have almost nothing, and because they have nothing, they are prone to being exploited, particularly at the level of fronting, because fronting generally is where white businesses use black people as the face, when they know exactly that those black people do not participate at the level of ownership. Among other things, they would not have any resource against which to acquire equity, nor buy shares, and they don't participate in management, and all those elements. So what it says is that they are, in most cases, black people who are exploited, black people who are used as a bait to open opportunities wherein they don't really participate and benefit, save for crumbs, probably as directors get those directors' fees, which are very much meaningless if you were to compare that with the value that they bring into the business. Be that as it may, Chair, while we know note that the vast majority of complaints have consistently been around this issue of fronting. This indicates that there may be limited or no consequences for this malpractice. In fact, this is cruelty. How does the Commission intend to correct this? Because, Chair, if this is left unattended, it simply means that the key objectives of the Act, you know, which aim at empowering black people in terms of ownership, in terms of control, in terms of management, and so on, all those objectives, they remain a pipe dream. And this matter, Chair, can't just be left to continue unabated. We have to draw a line, it must come to a stop. And linked to that, Chair, fronting, Chair, is a crime. It's criminal to front. And we note that, Chair, about 83% of the complaints relate to fronting. Yet for the financial year that is being reported, it doesn't seem that there are visible cases that have been referred to the prosecuting authority. Can this kind of anomaly, disjuncture, be explained? And you know, just to get a sense as to, in that front, what is it that we are doing? Because it talks to the nub, it talks to the crux of the fundamentals, you know, the as they would relate to the participation of black people into the main economy. I think those are the issues, Chair, I would like to check from the Commission. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Burns Mamashe. Honourable Moatse.
Thank you, Chairperson. And let me also welcome the presentation from the Commission. We welcome the entity for absorbing interns into permanent employees of the Commission. However, this seems to be limited to administrative position only. Are there any interns absorbed into strategic posts such as legal support, operations, or research? If not, why? We also further note that there is only one intern on board for the current financial year. What is the reason for this? Chairperson, in flight 17, only one graduate recruited and trained when there is a challenge to filling post. Can we get clarity, Chairperson, on how did the entity arrive at a decision that you will only recruit and train only one graduate? Also, how many or what percentage of referrals made for prosecution of a result of contravention of the Act are successful prosecuted? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Moatse. Honourable Motaung.
Thanks, Chair, for the opportunity. Let me also join members who have just welcomed the presentation. Commissioner, I just want to check, we note that 100% black ownership on the JSC has regressed from 3.3% in 2017 to 0% in 2020. What can this be attributed to, and what is the role of the Commission playing in correcting this? Secondly, the filling of the vacant post. I can see that the challenge for the Commission is with only 20 posts that were filled, 113 approved posts with unemployment on this rise. Why is this a challenge? And what are the remedial actions that the Commission is going to take to correct this? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mutau. And then to our visiting Member of Parliament who serves on the Small Business Portfolio Committee, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
You are muted.
Thank you, Chair. Am I audible? Can I proceed?
Your network is poor, so maybe you need to...
Chair, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the opportunity. Now, I think we also want to acknowledge the work done by the Commission despite their challenges, and I think as the portfolio, I think it's important that we note the challenges and also ensure that we provide support for them. I think there is still a purpose. I just want to engage with the politics of why there's the need for broad-based black economic empowerment. While some members would try to dismiss the work, I think this commission is doing absolutely good work. You know, Afrikanerdom and apartheid, if you look at the history of apartheid, for more than 50 years, Afrikaners were affirmed as a state policy, and they did it very effectively through state-owned enterprises, job reservations. So Afrikaans people got a heads up in life since 1948, in fact, before then. And so they particularly benefited from a form of affirmation. It's the very same people that have benefited and still maintain that benefit, that still maintain white privilege, are the very people that want to say that broad-based black economic empowerment should be scrapped. Yes, it must be improved, but it can't and it won't and it must not be scrapped, because, you know, if you look in the Western Cape, and this comes to the question I have, Chairperson, in the Western Cape, you actually have white economic empowerment, a very exclusionary practice that black people, colored people, brain mensa, swart mensa, we actually are not accessing government opportunities, both in the city of Cape Town and also in the provincial government. And I don't want to play politics. It's actually a fact. And so I'm asking, last year, I think it was 2018, 2019, where the commission also brought out some shocking findings of the Western Cape. Has the Western Cape actually improved in their broad-based black economic empowerment status? And what can we do, especially for government departments that don't have a localization policy, that don't actually invest in its local people? And so that's the key question I want to ask to this commissioner. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Jacobs. Back to you, Commissioner, and your team, and the DM, if she wishes to respond.
Chair, we have Ms. Mbuyane's hand was raised, Chair.
Oh, okay, I didn't see that. My apologies. Honorable Mbuyane.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I think mine is just a rider, Chair, to say I just want to check the relationship with the DFIs, which are NEF and IDC, CIFA, and Land Bank, with the Commission, so that we're able to link their work in terms of assisting the small businesses or the enterprises.
And also we request the entity to lift those issues, those policy matters with the department, so that they bring those issues that they're raising at the committee level, so that you can see how can we be able to assist the committee in giving them more power and more teeth to can bite on those that they are not relevant to the issue. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Honourable. Honourable Mbuyane, before I hand over to the team from DTIC, I just wanted to check the what are the benefits that the Commission is drawing from the MOUs with the Public Protector, the Competition Commission, the companies and the IP Commission and the Companies Tribunal? What is the benefit that the Commission draws from that? Over to you, Commissioner and DM.
Chair, I'm just trying to get an indication from the DM if she would like to go first.
Thank you, Chairperson. Commissioner, you may go first so that I come at the end to wrap up. Thank you.
Thank you, DM. Chair, I'll try to just respond to the questions in the sequence that they were raised. And I will also request the team if there's anything else that I have missed to then add to that. Chair, the first comment was in relation to the employment equity of the Commission. Chair, we have already alluded that the Commission, as much as it is created in terms of the Act as an entity, it's not an entity. So what we have been doing is to plan our operations as if we're an entity. So in terms of all of the compliance, whether it's compliance with the triple PFA, PFMA, employment equity, all the things that we are required to comply with, we are actually implementing all the measures to comply with them. So in terms of the targets for employment equity, our COO has already covered that, and she has indicated the issue around, for instance, the target around people with disabilities was particularly because of the fact that we've never had a proper office space since we started. We've been squatting, and as a result, even our recruitment processes would not be able to accommodate any further individuals to be recruited. But also, in addition to that, the fact that we do not have a compensation of employees budget, we do not have the ability to recruit. So the statistics that we're giving to you are based on the structure that we have right now in terms of the vacancies that have been filled, but then noting that we have no ability to fill any vacancies. So in terms of the recruitment, for instance, we've indicated that also the internship process, we are reliant on what the DTIC in terms of its structure says we can have. In terms of our strategy document, we have planned to have 10 trainees or interns each year so that we can then produce a lot more professionals into the market as well who are knowledgeable and have got experience on triple B matters so that we can expand the knowledge and the compliance in the various entities. But also what we intended to do with that, because triple B regulation was fairly new, we wanted to also create a pool from which the Commission can recruit when it advertises for its position. At the moment, Chair, I must just indicate that we are fully compliant with all of the rules and the regulations that govern the public sector entities. All of our processes are fully compliant, and we'd just like to confirm that. Yes, we do know that some of the targets, especially around disability or people with disabilities, we have not been able to meet that, and we will not be able to meet that even in this year because we don't have any vacancies to recruit on. In terms of just the formal engagements that we've had with the department, as well as I would say also with the National Treasury. Chair, you'll recall that when the Commission was established, it was made very clear that there isn't a budget from the fiscus that can be directly allocated. So the department was then advised to reprioritize within the department so that then there can be a budget allocated to the commission for its operation. And the commission, therefore, was then supposed to be listed as an entity that has got its own budget, and so that it can also be in a position to recruit its own staff. But that has not happened. And the engagement has taken place with the National Treasury, where the submission for the listing was made in 2018. And we still await the processes around that in terms of listing the entity, either as a public entity or as a trading entity, as the case may be. And that process is still not yet completed. And we are aware that the department, which is the DTIC, will continue to engage or is engaging in regards to that. Our concern is that this process has taken too long, and as a consequence, it has crippled some of our operations in a sense that, as our COO has already indicated, Chair, most of the management team has not taken any leave, and they have forfeited their days, because in terms of the processes, if you don't take your leave days, then you forfeit. And because government in general does not have any money to pay the leave, because the wage bill is high, there has been limitations in terms of what leave days can be paid. So almost everyone has forfeited their leave days because we are unable to take them. And on our side as management, it becomes extremely difficult, because you know that even if you can take that leave, the work will still be there, and the organization's reputation in terms of delivery will be affected. And we've got a lot of complainants who will then also call us in terms of their cases. So we cannot afford not to be at the office. So we continue to engage with the department, and we have made submissions for this to be resolved speedily. And we are basically just saying that that solution needs to happen, I think, as soon as possible, because it has been affecting our operations for long now, and it's no longer sustainable, unfortunately. So the engagements do take place, and I think the DTIC, through the COO, may then also just give an indication of at least the timelines within which some of these issues can then be resolved. So we've got also... for instance, vacancies that emanated, we've got two vacancies. In fact, there are three now, vacancies which ought to be filled. And again, also those positions we are unable to fill, because we don't have any decision making around the filling of positions. We rely on the DTIC budget for them to give us permission to fill any vacancies. So those issues can then be addressed, but the engagements do take place. I think on our side, it's just that the operations are affected continuously, and we believe that this is a disadvantage for the BBB policy itself, because we are not able to expand the level of impact that we would like to see the Commission executing to bring about the benefits that were aimed at. Chair, in terms of I'll allow Ms. Madonsela to cover the issue around the role of the BBB, sort of the Competition Commission in relation to BBB matters. And if there's a need for me to elaborate, then I will elaborate. But I do think that it is important for us to appreciate that actually it's not even the personal views or the views of the Commission in terms of, you know, the interventions that are done by various institutions in regarding to the BBB legislation. But I think it is important for us to remember that one of the reasons why the BBB Act was amended in 2013 was to also bring alignment in terms of all of the pieces of legislation, so that there is no disjuncture or conflict in terms of how BBBE is dealt with. So now, in terms of the BBBE consideration as part of the public interest issues within the Competition Commission space and the legislation that they oversee, they do have their own guidelines in terms of assessing mergers and acquisitions. And where they pick up public interest issues, their legislation allows them to raise those issues. And there are processes also within that framework where the parties are not happy about the decision of the Commission, they can then take it to the Competition Tribunal, and the Competition Tribunal can then attend to that. That kind of a process is not in conflict with what the BBBE legislation says. So it is important for us to always go back to what the law says. And in terms of the BBBE Act, if there can be any conflict that is identified between the Competition Commission legislation as well as the BBB Commission legislation, the amendments to the BBB Act do provide guidance in the sense that where there's any conflict on a matter that is dealt with in the BBB Act, the BBB Act will trump. And this has been confirmed also by the High Court in the case that related to AXA, where the High Court specifically indicated that the trumping provision will then be invoked in the case of conflict. However, in that case, they did not pick up any conflict because the legislation could be implemented parallel.
In terms of the other issues that have been raised, I think the DM will talk to the issues around localizations and preferential procurement and the employment equity, because I think that's a more high-level policy type question that can be responded to by her. But safe to say that in terms of the BBB Code of Good Practice, under enterprise and supply development, the issues of localization are also incorporated under the empowering supplier provision, where, for instance, then the BBB legislation encourages and rewards entities that are procuring and manufacturing locally. So it is important that we understand also that the BBB legislation is an integrated piece of legislation which then looks into preferential procurement, proportional representation on various decision making structures, but also on the advancement of Black people in terms of the skilling, but also in terms of the new business that can be created. So it's integrated. It's got a number of facets, but all of them they are aimed at achieving the economic equality that is required in this country. Chair, there are other questions that have been posed which required my personal view. Chair, again, I will indicate also that, for instance, we have said, based on the reports that we have received, based on the data that we've collected as the BBB Commission, we have noted that if we look at 2003, when the legislation was adopted, we have seen a number of Black people that have been empowered through the legislation. We've seen various BE deals that were concluded, which have enabled a number of Black people to actually have shareholding in various entities, but also having directorship and participation in decision-making structures. That is commendable. However, what we are saying is that because we are tasked as the Commission with the responsibility to monitor this on an annual basis, we are saying, based on the reports and the data that we've collected, we are not performing as good as we should. But it doesn't mean that there are no gains that have been achieved. I think if we are honest, Chair, in terms of looking at where we are right now, we'll appreciate that a number of Black executives that we see in the private sector would not have been there if the economic empowerment provisions in the legislation were not there, if the employment equity legislation was in there, because it was realized that when this legislation, this piece of legislation were implemented or were enacted, it was against the realization that the private sector, as well as the public sector, where they are required to actually perform certain functions, they have not been doing that on their own free will. And hence the reason why the legislative measures were introduced. However, if as we assess and monitor the compliance and the successes, if we can see that we are actually arriving where we actually ought to be. The NDP has got targets that are indicating in terms of where we should be by 2030. We are far away from reaching that. So now, if the question is whether the BBB legislation, based on the Commission's assessment, according to the report that it has produced, whether it's still relevant or not, we do believe that it's still relevant in a sense that not in fact half of the things that ought to have been achieved through it have been achieved. Of course, there are gains that have been recorded, and we do commend those. So in terms of just the other comment around the gap between the rich and the poor, this is
a situation that our constitution realized that there is the economic disparities that need to be addressed, hence the inclusion of these provisions in the Act in Clause 9 as well as Clause 217. It is because our constitution recognizes that. It is not going to be up to us as individuals to decide whether that economic parity has been achieved or not. But data should be able to tell us that. What we are not seeing at the moment is that whatever initiatives are taking place, yes, a few people are benefiting. As the DM indicated earlier, we've got pockets of successes. But when you look at holistically in terms of the economy of South Africa in general, we are not seeing the overall impact. We are not seeing a change in the lives of people. In fact, what we are seeing is that continuously more and more black people become unemployed, that more and more black people do exit the market where they are, where they've entered, and they are not able to be sustainable because of the manner in which the economic structure is like in South Africa. So, Chair, I would like to say that from our assessment, we do believe that the reasons for which this legislation was created still exist, and in fact, we just need, based on the recommendations that we have made in 2016 around the tightening and the strengthening, we continue to believe that if it is strengthened, if it is consistently applied by the private sector as well as the public sector, then we should be in a position to arrive at some objectives that were intended. I just want to also then immediately move to the issue that has been raised by also Honourable Member Ben Sungamashe. I think it flows exactly from what I just said, that if we are implementing the legislation consistently in the way that it should, and that there are consequences for not doing it, then we should be able to arrive at those achievements of the objectives. So at the moment, what we can say is that since we started in 2016, we have seen a lot of fronting practices that have got also elements of rent-seeking, facilitation by other unscrupulous people that are really driven by corruption. And we need to be in a position to isolate those corrupt activities from what BBBE is intended to be. And I think we must appreciate as well the elevation of corruption as one of the priority areas that government will be focusing on. So we believe that if corruption is dealt with, then we should be able to also deal with the rent seekers that whose pure intention is really to undermine what Act seeks to achieve. And the fronters, those companies that are fronting black people, whether those people know that they are fronted or do not know that they are fronted, there should also be consequences for that. So at the moment, the legislation says that once the commission has investigated a matter and then they conclude that there is a fronting practice, then the commission must refer those matters to the SAPS and or the NPA as the case may be. So, Chair, once we have made a referral to those entities, we do not have any control over what happens to them, and they will then follow the process in terms of the legislative mandate of those particular entities. And we can then make our follow-up just to check how the process is going. However, there is no obligation really on their side to be able to take up matters and prosecute just on the basis of the Commission's report. However, we do provide all the information together with the supporting evidence that we've gathered during the investigation, and hopefully in the near future we'll then begin to see some of the cases being prosecuted. I must indicate that of the cases that we've referred, we have not had a single prosecution that has been pursued yet, but we are hoping that through the engagements and the questions that do follow up when we have presented our files to them, that some of these matters will then be taken forward. Chair, I must indicate though that in terms of the matters that we've referred also to SALF, we have also seen some positive interaction in engagements there, especially in the CRRC matter.
where SARS did commence a process to also seek an order to freeze some of the assets and also to prevent certain transactions from continuing to happen while they are looking into the matter. So we do think that some of these regulatory entities, while they do have their mandate to perform in respect of their functions, but with interaction and engagement between us and them, we're able to make sure that some of the matters are actually taken forward and ultimately we'll see prosecutions in future. So just also in terms of the prevalence of fronting, we have indicated from the beginning, since we started, 80% of the cases that we receive allege fronting. We have also indicated in some of the cases we did not find merit to investigate, so we issued non-investigations. But Chair, what we have also noted is that in the cases that we are now receiving, especially from 2019, the quality of the cases has improved, in a sense that even the evidence that is provided and that is gathered and that can be obtained in this is evidence that is assisting us to then actually have more solid cases in terms of fronting matters. But we will then continue to refer those for criminal prosecution. But if that criminal prosecution process does not manifest, then the complainant, but as well as the public, remain in limbo. And we do not have any way of enforcing that part, and will then respect the processes, the criminal processes to be undertaken based on their own. So the second aspect that we are pursuing as the Commission, just in response to the issue around how is the Commission dealing with this, because it is a serious case. In terms of the Act, the Commission, the organs of state and public entities are allowed to cancel contracts, licenses, in respect of the entities that are found to have misrepresented their status. So in case of fronting, certainly the licenses would have been obtained fraudulently because the certificates would not have been what they ought to have been. But we have seen, as we've indicated when Ms. Madonsela was presenting, that in one of the cases with the fishing industry where the African tuna traders was awarded fishing rights on the basis of false information, we have made a recommendation for their license and their fishing rights to be terminated on the basis that the information on which they received the application or the fishing rights was false. And so we can only rely on those government departments to proceed to execute that. Same with the CRRC eLoco. In this case, the black people that were supposed to be 30% shareholders were made mere employees in the employees who were salaried. They did not have participation rights. They did not have any economic benefits in the form of dividends. But also the critical components of this joint venture was supposed to be supplier development in terms of ensuring that the components for those locomotives that were being procured from this Chinese entity can actually be manufactured in South Africa. Their transfer of skills did not happen. And so we also recommended the termination of the contract by Transnet. And that is the reason why the matter was then taken on review. So when matters are taken on review, things sort of come to a standstill. So it is important that when we recommend termination, because it's an immediate redress or immediate consequence for entities and it will hit in the pocket, those licenses, those contracts must be terminated. So when the Commission has got perhaps resources and it's got its own legal support and prosecution area, then we can be able to take up some of these matters on our own to pursue the court processes to terminate these kinds of licenses on the basis of the findings that we've made against those entities while we are awaiting the criminal process to take its course, because the criminal process can take as long as up to 7 years in some instances, which we are not able to wait. So we are proceeding to then make recommendations for licenses to be terminated. With the recent VTRJ matter, we managed to also get the the CIDB grading to be withdrawn from that particular entity which presented false certificates. So some of those consequences should actually be seen to be happening so that there can be a visible consequence for this. And Chair, I must indicate that also in terms of the organs of state, the organs of state are not supposed to deal or do business or award any authorization to companies that are not BBB compliant. Section 10 demands that this happens. And Section 10 was amended in 2013 to specifically make it obligatory as opposed to being an option. So we will also, we are pushing on the state-owned entities, the public entities, as well as organs of state, to ensure that there is at least a disincentive for companies that are not compliant or that are cutting corners in terms of BBB.
So I hope that answers the question that Honourable Namashe has raised. And if I go to Honourable Mwasi, also in terms of the questions that she has raised around the internship and the absorption, our COO did try to cover that. The absorption process in terms of internship, the policy that we operate with within the DTIC is that the when you are wanting to motivate for the retention of the interns or the trainees, we are allowed to then absorb them against the position of administrative clerk, which is the policy. So when we made the recommendation to absorb them, we wanted to absorb them for further training and development, and also to ensure that we give them further experience as opposed to the 1 year that the internships were meant for, which was then extended to 2 years. But we believe that because we are a new entity, we've got an opportunity to have mentors that can be assigned to these 19 trainees so that their training can be developed further so that their employability chances are enhanced. But also, when the commission starts recruiting, then they will stand a better position to be able to apply for positions and be able to be absorbed onto the structure of the commission. But at the moment, I think we are comforted by the fact that in the time when the economic situation was not very good, we were able to retain employment of about 19 people that ordinarily would not be employed at the moment. Because in the 2 years that we had them on the system, only two out of the interns that we had received employment elsewhere. So the majority had not received that, but we saw an opportunity to then further develop them. And we do believe that as we grow as an entity, we'll have opportunities to train more, but maybe not with the view of absorbing, but that we can be able to expand the availability of expertise around BBB. So in terms of the, and I think we've also addressed the issue around the intern, why we have only one. It's not our decision. We would like to make 10, but the financial constraints that the DTIC has indicated that we can only have one. And in terms of the referrals, I think Honourable Mwata have already responded to this, that none of the cases that we've referred to SAPS and NPA have been taken forward for prosecution yet. And we will continue to just follow up and also have engagement and at a higher level with the various institutions to make sure that at least they do attend to the matters as presented to them. Whether they decide to investigate or not, obviously that's their decision. But then we need to make sure that they are followed up. Chair, with Honourable Mutawu, in regards to the just listed entities, I think we must accept that the 100% black-owned entities have been less on the JSE. And, you know, they regress from 3% last year to 0%. One of the things that we realized as we were engaging with it was that, firstly, a number of entities were affected by COVID, so then which meant that some entities did not report. So it might be that the entities that did not report include the 100% black-owned entities. So that's the first reason, the non-reporting of those entities for us to capture that data. But secondly, we also did engage with the JSE
to look at the trends within the JSE. We also noted that there are a number of delistings that happened in the past 2 years. So we don't know whether those are attributed to the economic situation that was affected by COVID-19, but a number of delistings have taken place. So in the report for 2021, we should be able to see if the situation gives us a different picture, and then we can then be able to confirm for certain what could be the reasons, and whether in fact, indeed, those 100% black-owned entities have exited the market or not. So we should be able to give you answers as soon as the current report is finalized by the end of financial year, this financial year. So in terms of just the issues around the post, I think our COO has covered those extensively. Yes, we only have 20 positions that have been filled. It is not sustainable. We have worked with it for now 5 years, and it's not working for us. So everybody's fatigued at the moment, and we hope that this can be addressed urgently. Lastly, Chair, the relationship between the Commission, sorry, it's not the last one, the relationship between the Commission and the DFIs. The DFIs, like the NEF and CEDA and all of them, for us, firstly, they are public entities who are required to contribute to BBBEE in their own right, and they are required to submit their reports on an annual basis to the Commission for the Commission to assess how they are doing. However, in relation to their mandate, we have continuous engagements with them. We do participate in their processes, in their presentations, to then also identify some of the opportunities within the BBBEE legislation that would advance that. For instance, with the Department of Small Business Development, we have been engaging with them in terms of looking at the contributions that are made under the BBBEE Act to try and see how they can be ring-fenced towards supporting small businesses directly, as opposed to them looking out for opportunities somewhere, but to try and ring fence that. So they're working on a policy that will then have some proposals that can enhance the effective use of the enterprise and supply development contributions. But also what we are working with them on is also looking at the opportunity to enhance the contributions for procurement towards women-owned businesses, in line with the announcement that the President did make previously around the 40% target, especially for the public sector. What we're looking at with them is also the opportunity for that to be expanded to the private sector using the current framework within the BBBEE Act, because at the moment the BBBEE Act for women-owned businesses is setting a target only at 12%, and the 40% could go a long way. So we're working on with them on that. And we also believe that the support of the black businesses by the DFIs is critical, and we continue to engage with them to look at the opportunities for them to provide assistance for black businesses to be able to create their own businesses, but also to be able to acquire stakes in it. So in regards to the MOUs that we have, for instance, with the Competition Commission, as well as with the CIPC and the Companies Tribunal. Firstly, with the Companies Tribunal, Chair, a number of BBBEE complaints that we have, especially on fronting, they turn out to be shareholder disputes, which require a mediation process. So the Companies Tribunal is a body that was established in this country to be able to facilitate speedy resolution of disputes between shareholders. In this case, ordinarily, because the shareholders would be a black shareholder or black shareholders and white shareholders. Sometimes people assume that because it's black shareholders and white shareholders, then a dispute that emanates from them is a fronting dispute. So we find that some of them are not necessarily fronting cases, but disputes that require the parties to sit in one session where there is mediation or at least some alternative dispute resolution that can be facilitated. The tribunal has got the mandate to facilitate dispute between shareholders. So the MOU then assists us to set up the protocol for those referrals to take place and so that we can have a seamless exercise. But also in relation to the CIPC, the CIPC gives us real-time information. When we receive a complaint today, we are able to get access because of our MOU with CIPC, to get the records and the historical returns and everything regarding a company because of that access. So the MOU assists us to enhance our performance and in terms of executing our mandate, especially in regards to the investigations. And also when we pick up the violations around manipulation of financial statements, which is common in all of the Franklin cases, you find that the financial statements are manipulated, where the revenue of the company sometimes is siphoned to other entities that are linked to the other shareholders, to the exclusion of black people. We find a lot of that, and those are aspects that are addressed under the Companies Act, which the CIP has, the CIPC has got the responsibilities for. So our MOU also allows us to share that information, to refer those matters to them, but also allows us to raise awareness together on matters of common interest.
Yeah, I think I would not go on each and every one of the MOU, but just to give you a sense of that, the fact that the identified partners are the ones that would add value to the work of the Commission, but also the work of government in general. So the last thing that I just wanted to comment on is just to support the last comment around the issues around the relevance of triple BEE, and to again to emphasize again the need for consistency, the need for consequences, but the need for both the private sector and the public sector to do the right thing. And in regards to the status around the Western Cape organs of state and the public entities and the compliance in general, we wish to indicate that there's still serious gaps in terms of that, and we have been engaging with the Director General of the Western Cape government to ensure that we can get compliance by all of the entities that fall within the Western Cape government. And this process is continuing, and we're engaging directly with them in writing, but also through meetings. Okay, let me just see by way of an indication from the team if I've left anything, Chair. You will forgive me if I did not address any of the other issues that have been raised.
No, I think you've been quite thorough. I think given the time, we must just hand over. You know, we need to be in the house at 2 o'clock. We just need to hand over to DM Gina for concluding remarks and responses to questions raised. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. Thank you so much. Chair, on this one, if I can start on commenting on the issue of the listing of the commission so that it can open up things for them to be able to perform their duties the way that we all expect them to do. As the commissioner has said, we are in engagement with the Treasury and continuous engagements with the commission itself. It's one thing, as I'm saying, we are prioritizing the issue of the commission. We really appreciate the hard work they are doing, and even the stage that they have put before the committee, as to say, even the commissioners, the workers, the employees, really, the way they are working, they have stretched themselves so much. It's one thing that we are looking at as the DTIC, and we'll continue to engage with the commission. But our main aim and point now is to make sure that if Treasury release, they become listed so that it can be easier for them to perform their duties the way they are supposed to be performing. But meanwhile, the thing still stands as they are with the issue of financial constraints and so forth. We are in communication and engagement with them as to say how best as DTIC can make sure that we ease the task, the work that is being an overburden over them. Really, we highly appreciate the work that they are doing. And also on the one on legislation, Chairperson, I think mostly the gap that they've raised is something that we are going to be in communication again with the committees to say how best can we assist this commission so that the good work that they are doing, really they do get the chief to prosecute, to bite, and also talking to the issue of penalties so that we don't see them waiting this long for them to be seen that they are doing something. But with the examples and everything, I can assure you, Chairperson, that the work that has been done by this commission is just enormous, and it's working and it's contributing a lot to making sure that when we talk to the inclusivity of the people that will play their role in our economy, they do open a lot of doors. And that takes me to the question that has been raised by Honorable Cuthbert, where I don't consider it as a question. I think it was just his opinion as to say, when, what are we waiting, when are we going to see that other legislations and commissions that we are coming up with do not contribute in building the economy? As I'm saying, Chair, I don't think that one needs me to comment on it, because I really believe it's just his opinion, it's the way he sees things. It's just to say, maybe in another platform like this where he can come up with where he's saying these policies, just like this one that we're engaging on today, is not assisting, because the evidence that we have brought forward today shows that it does open so much doors for people that have been disadvantaged, that has not been playing part in the economy of our country. There are so many doors and opportunities that are open for them. So that is why I say I don't want to comment that much, but next time when it comes with some examples so that it can be a debate at the level of the committee and we look at those loopholes for those legislation and so forth, not to say we can just comment on the umbrella approach that he has used in the comment that he has raised. So I can assure you, Chairperson, with the committee, that there's so much that you are going to be working on with the commission, but on the work really that they've done, I know right now vigorously we must engage, we must see them engaging on the issue of 40% as the commissioner has said, and with DTIC, it's what we are going to be looking at as to say how do we continuously open doors for those women that have been previously disadvantaged, black people, people living with disability, and moving forward. So I just want to commend them on this work and say, Chair, whenever you call us to come and account on these issues of BBBE, like we have seen even on the EEIP, the work that this policy has opened doors for black people to come in and play the meaningful role in their economy, that's what we are always, will be always ready to come and do. But on my closing remarks, when Mr. Matipo was on the EEIP, was even talking, Chairperson, on the issue of digital hubs, where we are opening up even opportunities in our industrial parks, hand in hand with these companies where we're applying this program. I just want to say very soon, Chairperson, in one of our digital hubs in Butsapelo, we are going to be sending an invitation where you can send even the representative of the committee so we can go and attest in some of these things where we are saying these policies do open up doors and we do try to create opportunities for our young people to come in and have a meaningful role in our economy. So it's one thing that we are going to be opening it very soon, launching there, it's opening, it's beautiful with everything where our youth can come and engage and open up further doors for them to thrive and also getting into the economy. So that's what we're going to be doing, Chairperson, and in whatever we do so that we don't come here and talk as if these things are not there, but we'd really love to always have the representatives from the committee to come and witness some of these things that we always come here and report on. So on that note, Chairperson, thank you very much for this opportunity. As BBBE and the TIC will go back and continue to make sure that whatever challenges that have been raised here and the comments and the ideas that we have got from you at the level of the portfolio committee, we are going to include them and try and resolve the challenges and make sure that we continue to be of good service to our people. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. We look forward to that invitation, because it is really good to see policies and implementation in action. So we look forward to that invitation. Thank you, members, for a very robust discussion on a matter I know that we don't all agree on as a portfolio committee, but thank you for submitting your opinions and your questions for discussion in this committee. So as we conclude our deliberations for the day, acknowledging that for an inclusive economic transformation of the South African economy, and as the President said in Sona, leaving no one behind, and recognizing that deep poverty and unemployment is not sustainable within our country. We thank you for these two presentations that has been very enlightening, and we look forward, Deputy Minister, to you and your team coming back and keeping the committee informed of your implementation and challenges, and we also look forward to a report on the listing, the public listing of the BEE, the Triple BEE Commission. With that, can I ask the Secretary to inform us of the next meeting, please?
Chair, the next meeting is tomorrow starting at 9, and we'll get a briefing by the DTIC on its second and third quarter financial and non-financial performance report, and we'll consider one set of minutes, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you to everyone on the platform. Have a blessed day forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.